Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So I was just saying in the chat room before the program started that I'm kind of interested in the banality of three-digit numbers this evening. Now, what the heck could that possibly mean? Oh, you're ahead of the curve, you know. The banality of three-digit numbers. Three-digit numbers like, let's try one. How about a three-digit number like 183? As in, if at first you don't succeed, try, and on and on until you get to 183 again. You get my meaning. I personally do not know what the guilt or innocence of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is or was. Do you know why I don't know? I don't know what the guilt of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is or was for the same reason that you don't know what the guilt or non-guilt of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is or was. We share a common conundrum, really. We don't know what level of guilt, if any, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had in the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has not, to this day, as far as I know, to the best of my knowledge, been hailed into a court of competent jurisdiction dealing with the criminal law in either this or any other country on planet Earth, or planet Zorp for that matter, and subjected to rigorous trial of fact and law. Now, in this country, and I realize that it is largely a sham for poor people, people who can't afford hotshot lawyers, but in this country, we operate under the constitutional premise that one is, here we go, innocent until proven guilty. Now, I'm not going to go into some long, discursive description of how the criminal process works. It's not like I'm talking to wingnuts, okay? You know how the criminal justice system works. But suffice to say, I mean, that's the reason, for instance, that on the nightly news, where if it bleeds, it leads, the bad guy, before he has been tried, is always said by the newsreader or the reporter, you know, the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5, she can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye, it's interesting when people die, give us dirty laundry. You know, that crowd, the for-profit media, they always say, Mr. Jones allegedly beat his grandmother to death with a banana. You know, that allegedly, he so-and-so allegedly stole the car, so-and-so allegedly murdered, allegedly, well, you know, like Jane Harmon allegedly offered a quid pro quo to some spies from AIPAC. Like that, see? And you have to say allegedly, because there has been no official formal finding of fact or law as to the person's guilt or innocence, or not even innocence, guilt or non-guilt, technically within the framework of the United States criminal justice system. So you have to say allegedly. In other words, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was allegedly part of Al-Qaeda and had something to do with September the 11th, 2001, and the trauma and the hell and the murder and the death and the damnation and the ruination that went along with that day, which, as Franklin Roosevelt said, will live in infamy. We don't know. And for 8 tortured, literally tortured, years of the Bush administration, we were told that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, somehow or another, for reasons that plumb escape me, was not entitled to be tried either here, there, or anywhere. We would not try him in a box. We would not try him with a fox. We would not try him in the rain. We would not try him on a train. We would not try him, Sam I Am. The reasons for this were never made particularly clear. A lot of people think it's because perhaps the evidence was entirely too tenuous. So instead, the Bush administration decided to torture a confession out of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Do you remember? I mean, Jesus, it's going to be hard to talk about this topic tonight when you go back in time and you compare what we know now with what the Bush administration said then. Everybody from Dana Perineal to Dick Cheney to the Kinda Sleazy Rice, it goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, to Dim Leader himself said things like, waterboarding has only been used on 2 occasions, and we do not torture. Right? That wasn't the day that I screwed up and put the morning glory seeds on the home baked bread instead of the poppy seeds. Was I mean I didn't that no I don't think so. I heard that. You heard that. We heard that. Now there's probably audio tape and videotape and stored footage of it out there somewhere. All those Bush administrations, it's only been used 2 times. It's only used on 2 occasions. Well, apparently what they meant by that was waterboarding was only used on 2 people that they were talking about at the time while their fingers were crossed behind their back and their toes were overlapping themselves inside their the Johnston Murphy loafers. Because, like I said, it's the banality of 3-digit numbers here. My mind is boggled. My mind is flummoxed and dumbfounded. And I trust yours probably is as well. It turns out, and you know, again, it's one of those numbers you can just say it and it still doesn't make any sense, and you say it again and it's not no help, and you look at it, Godfrey Daniel, mother of pearl. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, during the month of March 2003, just slightly over 6 years ago, was waterboarded 183 times in a month. And, according to the torture memos that were released, they didn't just use the little flask of water thingy like we've seen in the videos. They really pumped it to him. CIA agents, military people, the Bush administration, who knows? The one thing we do know about everyone who did that is that they are war criminals. They are offenders against humanity. Not because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is any wonderful human being, but because there are minimum standards of human decency that we ourselves set forth to the world at Nuremberg, beginning at Nuremberg and in Tokyo. And we said, nobody gets to do this. Nobody. And you know what? I don't think Robert Jackson's fingers were crossed on that. the guy who was the man who was the part and parcel of the Nuremberg war trials. And I don't think his fingers were crossed. I don't think there was any asterisk at Nuremberg. I don't think there's any portion of it that says paren, except the United States, close paren. No. 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 And yet, in March 2003 alone, and God in heaven only knows how many other times that have not been disclosed, in March of 2003, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded 183 times. Like I said, this is a mathematically troubling subject. 183 times divided by 31. Okay, let's just make it 30 and 180 to make it easy. 3 into 8, 6. That's 60 times a day. That's every 15 minutes for 24 hours. Have I got that right? Maybe not. Somebody will get it right, though, and you'll let me know. They had, Jesus Christ, they had to be waterboarding Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in shifts. Christ Almighty, it would be fine. It'd be like something out of a damnable Warner Brothers cartoon. Did you remember the one where the coyote's after the sheep? And the sheepdog comes and clocks in and, morning, Sam. Morning, Ralph. And the other sheepdog clocks out, and the other coyote clocks in, and picks up where the other one left off. You know, the sheepdog's got the coyote by the neck, and he's on his head. And the whistle blows, and the next one, and he takes the new coyote, but and the whistle blows again, and on his head some more. That's what happened with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in just the month of March 2003. And to the extent that I'm able to talk about it at all, I'm slightly amazed. But that's the reality. They waterboarded the guy in shifts. And we have not... Wait, sports fans. For those of you scoring at home and those of you listening alone, that's not the only way. Because remember they said they'd only done it on two occasions? And it turns out that only means two people that they were willing to tell us about. Because then there's Abu Zubaydah. And Abu Zubaydah, Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded 83 times in August of 2002. And that doesn't divide nearly so neatly, so I will leave that up to you. 24 divided. That's 30 times a day. Roundabouts. That's 15 times every 12 hours. That's a little more than once an hour. Of course, that was August 2002 and before the Twin Towers came down. So maybe they were just, not before the Twin Towers came down, but before we started the war in Iraq. So maybe they were just taking it a little easy. The patriotic fervor of, Saddam brought down the Twin Towers, hadn't fully kicked in yet. Is that the, what the, huh? What, how? What?
Most days. Most days, I spend some small portion of it, maybe because I'm just a hopeless softy or mama's boy or whatever. But most days, some portion of my day will be taken up thinking of my mother, gone these soon to be 12 years now. And some other portion of the day will be taken up with the briefest memory of my father. Those of you who have lost loved ones understand what I'm talking about. It comes unbidden, and when it comes, you think, God, if only I could tell them, fill in the blank. But over the weekend, and this hit Saturday night, these numbers, I had one of those rarest of moments when I read this and I thought, I am for once on balance, at least where this is concerned. Glad that my World War II era parents did not live to see this vicious, hateful, pernicious day. Because it would have driven them mad. My mother, the Sunday school teacher, for whom the crucifixion and torture of Jesus Christ was as real to her as if she had witnessed it herself. And who theologically was unable to buy into, well, you know, he had to do that. It had to be that way. There was always some portion of her mind that rebelled at the idea of the necessity of the passion. And my father, who admittedly carried a hate for the Japanese people, to the best of my knowledge, to his grave. Not necessarily for Pearl Harbor. Not necessarily for the shots they took at him aboard an aircraft carrier in the South Pacific Theater. No. The hatred he bore and carried to his grave, he bore for the victims of the Bataan Death March, among other atrocities. And he declared when he would get particularly irate, that anyone who would do something as evil as that, and he felt the same way about the Germans because they killed his brother, but not so much because they killed his brother, but because of what went on in the labor camps and the concentration camps and in the gas chambers and the ovens. When he became particularly irate, he would declare that no people capable of such heinous evil should still exist on the planet. And I can tell you, it made for some heated discussions between a young man and his veteran father. You know, the kind where one or the other stomps out of the room and doesn't speak to the other for a day or so. And when this news broke, 183 waterboardings in 1 month for one man, one human being, and 83 waterboardings in 1 month for another. I did. I thought of my father. And I thought, it's a good thing you are where you are now. Because you would not have been able to stomach the knowledge of what you fought to save has become. The banality of three-digit numbers, 183 waterboardings, 100 waterboarded 183 times in the month of March 2003, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. After 183 waterboardings, does a human being have a mind left? If you were actually hoping to get some sort of vital information out of a human being, somewhere around waterboarding 20? 30? There's nothing left there to coerce into speech. And after that, it becomes sadism. After that, it becomes nailing doorknobs on walls for blind people. After that, it becomes M-80s put up the butts of frogs. After that, it becomes puppy torture. After that, it becomes, dare I say it, Dahmer-esque. And somewhere around in there, the people who do it become as damaged, as almost as damaged, as the people to whom it is done, unless they are already psychopaths and sociopaths. Because that psychopathology, that sociopathology, is the only thing that could possibly protect the human spirit, the human soul, the human mind, the human je ne sais quoi, from being utterly ruined with guilt. I have wondered, after seeing these banal three, that banal two and three-digit number, those, I've wondered if part of the reason that President Barack Obama, has said that the people who did the torturing would not be prosecuted. Forgive me, the way I work, I am a liberal and I do not shy away from that fact. I've wondered if it's because those people are already past trying. Yeah, okay, I've been corrected. Six waterboardings a day for Abu Zubaydah. And don't forget that there's lots of other fun that's involved in it. There is, for instance, the freezing temperatures, the box with the bugs in it, and as our buddy David from Tennessee pointed out the other day, these things happen in Siri. So you're getting waterboarded day in and day out, and they take you out to waterboard you, and then they put you back in a 4x4 box and say, here's your bug! Then they put you in a nice quiet room with nice thick concrete walls where maybe your guards can't hear the screaming. Do you suppose the guards set to watch Khalid Sheikh Mohammed simply became immune to the smell of vomit, to the smell of human urine, to the smell of human feces? They would just about have to, because all of those things would be attendant upon a person so tortured. It has been said that the people who were downwind from the smokestacks at Auschwitz said you could eventually become accustomed to the smell. I don't know. But there you are, torturing someone day in and day out. And unless you are every bit as sick as Jeffrey Dahmer, you don't tolerate that well. And so reading those banal little numbers, it came as a particularly galling instance when today, at a press briefing, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs echoed White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel's statement that those who devised the policies should not be prosecuted. That's a quote from Rahm Emanuel. That's not just the people who did the torture. Oh, hell no, brothers and sisters. That's the people who devised the torture memos. Bear in mind, the New York Times over the weekend called for the impeachment of federal judge Jay Bybee for his hand in developing a torture regimen that included 183 instances of waterboarding in a single month. Missouri Senator, Claire McCaskill said we should look at impeaching Jay Bybee. The Senate should look. No, the word, Madam Senator, with all due respect, is must, shall. Not precatory, but hortatory. Must, ought, to begin impeachment proceedings against federal judge. Can you imagine knowing what you know? Can you imagine being a lawyer who, you know, a lawyer, mind you, but a lawyer who pays his bills and tries to live above, live within the law, keep his nose clean, and to stand in a federal courtroom and have to look at Jay Bybee and say, Your Honor? I couldn't get the word out of my mouth. If I knew the man on site and saw him coming down the sidewalk and I had my children walking with me, I can assure you that I would cross the street so that I not run the risk of breathing the same air as that monstrous maggot. So that all came out. And then today, Rahm Emanuel said, no, we really shouldn't prosecute the people who wrote the torture memos. So necessarily, that question had to be asked of White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs.
You talk about America's image around the world. The president has talked a lot about that as well. What signal does it send the world if potentially people in the Bush administration at first potentially broke the law? This administration is now saying we're too busy There's a lot on our plate, obviously. No, this argument's been out there. But we're not going to. You said we can't look back and look forward.
Right, but
what signals that
send? The administration didn't say they were too busy, Ed. The administration on the second day of a very busy day, in a very busy week, in a very busy 100 days, banned the technique. Okay? I mean, let's understand. Hold on. Give me a chance to answer your multitude of questions.
Question.
I understand. I'm glad you've rephrased it. The president took the extraordinary step of stopping these techniques from ever being used. Again, as part of his administration. The president does believe, and...
Okay, just one second. Robert Gibbs says that President Obama stopped the practice. Unless the people who did it and the people who devised it are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and brought to justice... Well, it's like that old gag about the unarmed police in England. Stop! Or I'll say stop again! What guarantee have we that no one will do this? Unless the people who did do it are tried before a jury of their peers, the jury that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was damned well not afforded, tried before a jury of their peers, and if the evidence is convincing, beyond a reasonable doubt, convicted, and having been convicted, passed sentence upon and imprisoned, well, life would be too short in my book. So you can say the president stopped it all you want to, Mr. Gibbs, but unless we prosecute those who did it, you can't say that the process has been stopped as a result of the president's order. Absent punishment, in this instance, there is no deterrent.
Attorney General said quite clearly that those that believed in good faith that these techniques had been declared legal by the Department of Justice should...
Now stop it! Who in good faith? Those two little trick words. Who in good faith could possibly believe that waterboarding a human being 183 times in a month was legal? The idea of 183 waterboardings in 1 month and the phrase good faith are mutually exclusive. Damnation! Am I the only person? No, I'm not. You do too. But are we the only ones who see this? I'm gobsmacked. 183 of any crime. 183 parking tickets in a month? And you say, you know, Judge, I parked in good faith in the same spot 183 times in 1 month, and the judge will say, and the prosecutor will say, no, you didn't. Maybe you did the first couple of times, but after about 5, you shoulda oughta knowed better. So we've cleared that one up too, I think.
Should not be prosecuted. The president also believes that rather than looking backward and fighting this backward, that it's important to move our country forward.
I'm officially sick to daggum death of that statement. I mean, I have so had enough of that look forward BS. It's embarrassing. I mean, this is not President of the United States George Bush, who had to be dragged kicking and screaming through school. This is President of the United States, Barack Obama, constitutional scholar. And you cannot make it wash with me. You know, a moron like Dim Leader says, we don't torture. Well, remember, he stuffed M-80s up frogs' butts, so he has a very narrow definition of what constitutes torture, and it's anything that he's doing it's nothing that he did. But this is Barack Obama. This is a man who has grown up with the knowledge, by virtue of his very being, Medgar Evers and Dr. King, and little boys and girls buried in earthen dams in Mississippi. In Barack Obama's adopted hometown of Chicago, the tortured body of Emmett Till was displayed in an open casket because his mama insisted that the world see what vicious, hate-filled, racist, torturing, redneck bastards had done to her baby boy. And President Barack Obama cannot ever be argued to be ignorant of any of that. And to turn away from this torture is the same as turning away from the murder of Dr. King. Not because of who the victims were, but because of what the practice is. But because of what is at stake for our country. To turn away from the prosecution of torturers, whether they be the enablers who wrote the memos or the torturers who did the evil deed. Deeds is nothing short of an abandonment of every principle that the United States holds to be dear. Is that crazy? I don't think it is. And you cannot abandon those principles and say, well, we're abandoning our principles because we want to look forward and not back. If that amounts to saying that the administration does not have the back, so to speak, of the Constitution of the United States. And anybody who's ever been in a tense situation knows that you are more vulnerable from your rear than you are from your front. So while you're striding boldly into the future, if you don't look back, now I know Satchel Paige says don't look back, something might be gaining on you, but if you don't look back, you will only feel the shiv when it slides between your ribs and never see it coming. And this decision is a shiv in the ribs of the Constitution of the United States of America.
That's what he signaled by banning the use of these techniques. And that's where his focus is.
You're saying the people in the CIA who followed through on what they were told was legal, they should not be prosecuted. But why not the Bush administration lawyers, well, again, who, in the eyes of a lot of your supporters on the left, twisted the law? Why are they not being held accountable?
Oh, pardon me. Kiss my ass, Ed Henry. Your supporters on the left. I'm not demanding this because I'm on the left. I'm demanding this because without a constitutional framework of governance, we're nothing. We're nothing.
The president is focused on looking forward. That's
what. Follow up on that?
I, for one, cannot for an instant follow that reasoning. I just can't. I'm stunned. I honest to God, don't know. How do you look somebody in the eye and make that pathetic, flaccid argument? I don't know. So we'll take a little. Well, no, we're not going to take a little break. All the lines are lit up. I don't want to make anybody wait. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. Oh. Hey, welcome to the program. Wrong button.
Two words. Pardon me if I mispronounce them. Yad Vashem.
Yad Vashem?
Mm-hmm. Rahm Emanuel is Jewish. Tell me. You think he would have preferred that the Allies didn't go after Fritzky, Hess, Goering, Jodl, Kottenberg, von Krupp.
Dear God, that's a very good point.
I could go on and on, but you get the idea.
Yeah, I do get the idea.
So, I can't get out of my head. Elie Wiesel. That man went till the day he died. He could have made a mint speaking, but he went until the day he died, hunting down the monsters who had perpetuated the Holocaust, who had taken part in it from the lowest to the highest, for one reason only, so it could never happen again.
I just managed to run my mouth for something like 40 minutes over this, so it's a little bit disingenuous for me to say that I'm speechless about it.
And this man, Rahm Emanuel, who should know better, who has been taught from the cradle what it means, I know better. I'm a witch, and I know better. Because, you see, I had a father like you had, like yours. My father dove into burning oil off an aircraft carrier that had been torpedoed in the Coral Sea.
Yep.
But his hatred was for... Okay, the school districts didn't teach me so much about the Holocaust. Or about what happened at the Bataan Death March. My father taught me.
Yeah, well, you didn't know. And, you know, one of the things I never found out from my father, Susan, is when he found out about the Bataan Death March.
I think he knew people, shipmates, who had become mired. Yeah, ended up on islands that had ended up on Bataan. People who had, their ships had been sunk, they ended up somehow or another on Bataan as fragments of units. And then maybe one or two of the units survived. But he never talked about it, per se. But he taught me in gruesome detail. me one other thing. He gave me he didn't love much. He was the original Archie Bunker, the original cynic. I mean, the man was, he was obnoxious, to put it mildly. But he had a great and abiding love for the U.S. Constitution. And I'm like you. I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad my father is dead, because now he doesn't have to see the second president in a row violate his oath and commit an impeachable offense.
Hear, hear.
Because in prosecute those people, he is violating his oath of office.
Well, you know, the United Nations rep even went so far as to say that this is actually, that our refusal to prosecute is in itself a violation of international law.
Yeah, that becomes, Barack Obama has just become complicit in war crimes.
You don't know how.
How does it feel, Barack Obama, to be the first black war criminal in the United States history? You're not only the first black president, you're the first black war criminal, because you are not prosecuting, therefore complicit.
Exactly.
And
I don't like coming to that conclusion, Susan.
I don't either, but I got to tell you, I'm not going to wait around for 4 or 8 more years. I'm done. I'm done with him. There are lines I will not cross. I was willing to cut him a whole lot of slack, but this one, no. I'm done. Come election time, I will support somebody else in the primary. I doubt a whole bunch if he will, anybody but Barack Obama will be nominated, in which case I won't vote for a Republican, but I won't vote for Barack. I cannot do it.
I understand the sentiment, and I know what the dynamic will be, because it'll be a Jeb Bush or a Piyush Jindal. But
I can't,
I won't take you on that issue, Susan.
Because
it is an issue of conscience.
Then I become one. And I won't be a good little German. Barack Obama may want to be a good little German, but I won't be one.
I know what you
I'm
mean.
Not going to go to my grave with the smell of the smokestacks in my nose. He can. And by the way, all of the information that was gotten from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, all they had to do was get a TV set, because he was on Al Jazeera bragging about it for months.
That's why this doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, there's a quote, there's something out there that bears mentioning here. On Friday, there was an op-ed piece by Michael Hayden and Michael Mukasey in the Wall Street Journal. And in it, there are statements like this. The techniques themselves were used selectively against only a small number of hardcore prisoners who successfully resisted other forms of interrogation, and then only with the explicit authorization of the director of the CIA.
Bullshit.
No, it's not. What you have on Friday is Michael Mukasey and Michael Hayden saying that the CIA director explicitly authorized 183 instances of waterboarding in 1 month.
If that's your idea of a small number, my God, what do they term a lot?
This the Wall Street Journal op-ed is a confession, and there was no waterboarding necessary.
Yeah, because he was on Jazeera spilling his guts to everybody and their mother who had a TV set. They tortured that man to show they could. And that's strictly sadism. And anything he said after that, and I read what he said, he confessed to everything up to and including the killing of Cock Robin.
Yeah.
Well, of course he would. I would too.
This is, I know. Susan, thank you very much. I've got a bunch of blinkies here I got to get to, but thank you for the Yad Vashem reference.
Yeah, give my love to Agnes, and I'm going to go bowl and then write another nasty letter to Obama, and I see if I can't find an address for Emmanuel.
Office of the White House Chief of Staff, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C. Should get it there.
Thank you. Then I'm going to be calling my congressional delegation. Specifically, my House representative. The impeachment rises in the House. It will do nothing. It will go nowhere, but hopefully it may just shock the dear man into saying, "Oops, I stepped in this one."
I don't know. I can't get inside the logic or the mindset that produced this decision, Susan.
I can't either.
Susan, have a good night, dear.
I'm going to go be depressed some more. You too.
Yeah, go wear out the keys on your keyboard.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
And so, Bob, on to another subject.
Yes.
Hello.
Hey, Kate.
I don't have any thing to say. I'm trying not to rub my hands with glee because I remember sitting in a really comfortable chair about a year ago saying, he's an empty suit that talks pretty, and I don't trust him, and I'm having a hard time not going nanny, nanny, nanny to everybody who...
No, I understand that, Kate, and that's what I hate about the equivocal nature of American politics.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, by the time you get down to November, it's the other guys are really big horse's ass, so who are we going to vote for? And we wind up with that... That Hobson's choice, that horse by the door, no horse at all.
Well, we've got everybody. I mean, nothing changed. We got all the old people in the, you know, Henry Kissinger still pulling the strings. So I don't want to talk about this subject. I wanted to say that I'm slowly working on my citizenship papers for Dixie, and vanilla ice cream with crystal hot sauce on.
Yes, indeed.
The other day. It was wonderful. Oh, anybody, you know, don't scoff until you've tried it. It was great.
Especially on a nice warm day.
No, it was actually a nice cool day. Rainy and just a blustery outside.
It has to be good in high summer.
Right. And anyway, I want to be brief here because I know your lines are lit up and I've got to get back to the kitchen. I've got 70 people in the camp today and I got to go make potato salad for 100 people. So I got some business to take care of. I took a trip just recently and I had the most startling revelation and I don't know, somehow I feel ties in. I have to give us some conscious thought tonight, meditate on it a little bit, but it somehow ties into everything we're talking about tonight, about systems organization. I went from New Orleans to Atlanta to North and South Carolina to Tennessee and up to Kentucky and then back down to Louisiana. And I had a really startling revelation someplace around Athens, Georgia, where I was sitting in traffic waiting to get on the freeway and there were all these car license plates around me, like North Carolina, South Carolina, Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, of course, you know, just, and I thought, and being from out west where things are so far apart, I, when you see a license plate, you automatically registers, oh, there's New Mexico. Wow, cool. I wonder where they live. Well, here, everybody lives so close together. I mean, you could throw a rock and get to another state, you know. And I thought, there's like no discernible difference between, you know, these people, they're from South Carolina, and I know they've got this rage and pride about whatever, and North Carolina's got, you know, Heels, go Heels, you know, or Duke, whoever you are. And there just doesn't seem to be any discernible difference between, I mean, there is, but not when you're sitting in traffic looking at license plates. And it made me think about systems organization. And when organisms are so close together, they have to do something really absurd in order to distinguish themselves from being different. You know, making sense yet?
Yeah, yes, cool. Yes.
But anyway, when people live so close together in the Carolinas and Georgia and Tennessee and, you know, the absurdity they have different music styles that they're really proud of. They almost isolate themselves with football sports and the sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk Heels to Duke without a big argument like Bama and like the Tide and Auburn. You know, I mean, just bring that up, you can start a whole nother.
Yeah, and everybody has the appropriate sticker to know which way the conversation flows.
Absolutely, and you don't know who you're talking to unless you see the plate, or you hear that there are definite language differences too. I'm noticing that. I mean, you just can't. So this is the kind of like Dixie for Dummies moment, you know. You can't just assume that somebody says a word funny where they're from that they're all the same. They aren't. Nobody's the same down here. It depends on where their loyalties lie. You know, I mean, you've got some of the states have their own NASCAR drivers that they have. They're just
yes.
proud of.
And you know what? If I might point, it's a function, and it's a prime example of regionalism, Kate.
Yeah, yeah. And so so it goes with the torture and the politics and the nothing's changing and everything's changing and, you know, and everybody's got their own flags but also there's something about geography that the mountain ridges and the rivers, et cetera, keep they keep a distinguishing like the diphthongs and the phonemes or what phonetic
yeah.
whatever
yeah.
whatever the other word. They're kept within their own region by the geography, by the nature of the geography, whether it's not freeways anymore, but it's just mountain ridges and rivers and mountain ranges and hollers, and you know, I mean, everybody has their own distinguishing language, and I really have to think more about that. I really appreciated that little. It was just an epiphany sitting there in traffic, looking at all those license plates out west, where a license plate out of state is such an anomaly, you know, usually. And I just thought that was kind of. It's just part of my citizenship, you know.
Well, it is, and you know, you took the big loop, and you traveled all. And this may sound a little crazy, Kate, but you traveled all of the Souths.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Because we tend to talk about the South as a monolithic thing, but I know darn good and well the Appalachian South is a big difference from the Bluegrass South, or when you get into the Alabama and around the Black Belt South, or the Piedmont South, or the South mm-hmm. of the uplands of central Kentucky and central Tennessee, and you know, down toward the river there, toward Memphis and Vicksburg and so forth. Well, they're all very different places.
Yeah.
And of course, if you want to travel far enough back in time, you'll find out that this regionalism develops, one, especially where the mountains are concerned, as a function of geographic isolation. You know, you can get in with a hell of a lot of struggle, but it's a real booger getting out.
and you can move in, and you never get there. You're always going to be an outsider. Yeah.
And the other part of that is that. you know, as long as there, from the moment that the region was colonized, you know, starting with the coastal area and working westward,
mm-hmm.
the people with the money and the power always busted their rear ends, Kate, to make sure that the people who had neither stayed at each other's throats.
Absolutely. And that's still going on. Huh?
And it manifests itself. I mean, you mentioned Alabama and Auburn. The University of Alabama, and I having partially matriculated there at one point, had a cup of coffee in T-Town. The University of Alabama looks down its nose at Auburn and refers to Auburn as Auburn and yeah. That cow college.
Yeah, right. I remember that. Well,
you know, as if no, and, you know, and I bear a lot of love for Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama, but as if the University of Alabama was some sort of institution of higher learning.
Well, isn't it?
Really kind of does depend on your definition of higher.
Yeah, how high.
You know, Harvard and Yale, it ain't.
No.
Now, granted, the University of Alabama did rip off Harvard's football colors, crimson, you know, the Harvard crimson, the Alabama crimson tide.
There you go. You're doing it.
Of course I'm doing it. It's coded into my genetics, Kate.
That's the point. That's the point. That when systems are so close together, to an organism, that organisms have to do something to distinguish, have to do something absurd in the formal use of the word. That organism has to do something absurd to distinguish itself as different than the rest of the organisms in the system. And I just thought that was kind of a lovely, I also went looking for my grandma's birthplace and don't have enough information. I don't think I was in the right place or whatever it wasn't, and nothing resonated in Greene County, Tennessee, but I did find some sacred ground. I went to the Highlander Institute in Newmark. Oh, God. More about that later. It's top of the hour. I want to get out of here. I got to go make potato salad for 70 people.
71, if I count.
Yeah, you do count. I'm really proud that I'm getting closer and closer to knowing more about where I'm at and what to say to whom. And I guess you don't say whom, huh? You just ask, how's your mom and them doing?
How's mom and them?
And I wanted to do a kind of a special shout out that a friend is having a birthday today, and I've been, that part of my citizenship test, I'm being taught how to eat grits with or without cheese. I mean, wait, is that a regional thing? I mean, my God, it's worse than you. When I bring up grits and sugar or grits and syrup, hey, we have had this conversation before. Well, that's how some people act about putting cheese on their grits. Oh, my God. Never mind. I said, where are you from? And they, well, we don't talk about cheese with you. You know, anyway, I'm learning. And about the regional barbecue sauces, holy cow. Oh, barbecue sauce is almost as big a deal as a football game.
there's been reputations ruined and noses flattened. Everything from, you know, that sticky, gooey. Well, okay, official barbecue sauce statement here or story. A dear friend of mine brought some barbecue by that he had carefully smoked and had some left over and wanted to share because he knows that I'm a bit of an aficionado. So he brought enough for everybody to have sandwiches in there. It was yummy. And out of the shortness of time, if nothing else, he just sauced it with an off the shelf brand, and it was yummy. It was yummy.
Yeah.
But you know me, I like a little fire. I'm, for instance, not daunted by the idea of hot sauce on vanilla ice cream.
Right.
So we were standing in the grocery store, and I said, well, this one says spicy. And I picked up, and this is a non-endorsement, I picked up a bottle of Stubbs's barbecue sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, picture Mr. Stubbs on the cover. And looks, you know, has all the, you know, got the hat and the kind of been hanging out around the smoker all my life kind of look on his face. And on the top it says, my life is in these bottles. You know, man, You know, barbecuing is what I do. All right? My life is in these bottles, so I'm kind of psyched. I'm thinking, well, this could be good. I get it home, and I also bought it because it was one of the few barbecue sauces that did not contain high fructose corn syrup.
Uh-huh.
It just had plain old, you know, corn syrup like Cairo in it, which is a different animal. So,
right.
With the plastic down, with the seal, and off, and I tasted it, and biggest dadgum disappointment I had all day yesterday, Kate. Honest Pete, it was.
Wow.
And I looked at Agnes, and I said, look this here label. My life is in these bottles.
You need another life, huh?
And I looked at Agnes, and I said, taste that. And she did, and she made the same face I did. I said, apparently his life consists primarily of ketchup with a little bit of black pepper thrown in it.
Mm.
So, you know, yeah, a certain segment of the South and West will get as snooty about barbecue sauce as some folks do, I suppose, about, I don't know, wine.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, me, I'm not into thick and gooey near as much as I am into thin and hot, as you were.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, I guess you wouldn't go to the Carolinas and ask for some pulled pork and expect it to be red and gooey and thick and ketchup-y, huh?
Well, I love my benchmark sauce is the stuff that I was basically weaned on, and that's the sauce at Dreamland in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is red and has some sweet, but a hell of a lot of fire and a bunch of tang, and is thin. It should not have the consistency of ketchup coming out of the bottle.
Oh, is that the place out across the tracks down south of town?
It's out McFarland Boulevard. Yeah.
Right. I didn't like that sauce. Ooh, it was too hot, and it was just, I don't, what's the name of that place?
Dreamland?
Huh?
Yeah, Dreamland.
That was the name of the barbecue joint?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't like their sauce. It was a terrible disappointment. I don't know what the hell I wanted, but I'm learning. Anyway, let's get out of here. You got calls piled up, and I just wanted to wish my friend a happy birthday, and I got to get out of here and go.
And I have already emailed a happy birthday as well.
All right, thank you. Well, let's hear a little bit of music then.
Well, I actually want to hear more phone calls. I have a feeling this might be one of those no music, go right through kind of days.
Well, damn. Okay, that's the way it is. Back to your tortures, and I'm going to go do something else. Okay.
Well, I think your next step is to find out what happens if you try something besides Crystal on your vanilla ice cream on your blue bunny, Bluebell.
It could be like Louisiana hot sauce. That's my favorite. But what else would you suggest? Barbecue sauce?
Oh no. I'm thinking in terms of you know how much of a chili, as in chili pepper flavor you get out of it, because there's hot. See, one of the reasons I don't go in for McElhaney's Tabasco sauce is because all you taste is heat. You don't taste the pepper. You just get the little salt on your tongue, and there's some vinegar and salt involved. So I generally go in. I love Cholula myself, but that's really Southern. That's downright Mexican. But it tastes like chili peppers.
Yeah, well, I'm still going with cheese on the grits and some hot sauce and stir them up real slow.
I'm right there with you.
Maybe put a little bit of egg in it. Oh my God! In a warm dish.
If we ever get the chance, I will do for you deep fried cheese grits.
Thank you, poo.
Oh no.
Okay, I won't stop. Anyway. All right, just going to go about singing. That's what I like about the South for the rest of the evening with Phil Harris in mind. So I'm out of here.
I'll try to wedge Phil in somewhere if I possibly can.
As you were.
All right, take care.
Thanks for taking this call. Let me jump into your stream where I didn't really belong, and I kind of messed up your whole rant and everything, but that's okay.
Didn't mess up nothing tall.
You can pull it back off. You can slam it back up against the wall. Whatever. I'm out of here. I'll talk to you again.
All right. See you, Kate. Bye. And that is Kate calling from New Orleans. as she has just, you know, it's like a National Geographic special with Kate. Hearing someone who is seeing the South through entirely different eyes is a delightful thing. So let's see, what do we got going on here? Let's try this one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Take a look at the bridegroom smiling, pleased as pie. Shaking hands all around with a glassy look in his eye. Oh, hello, am I on?
Yeah, you are so on.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, some of us are trying to find something good about this month. And for me, music can provide that. Dave Edmonds can sometimes provide that. Because April has just been...
I knew the bride when she used to rock and roll.
Oh, I did, too. Bob, birds are supposed to be singing in April, and grass is supposed to be greening up, and people are supposed to be putting tomato plants in their gardens. And what do we have? We have Adolf Hitler's birthdays in April. We have Columbine. We have Waco.
Yeah, 10 years ago today, Columbine.
Oh, I know. I lived in Colorado at the time.
Ooh.
When that happened. Matter of fact, I worked for the district attorney's office. And, you know, when you turn the weapon on yourself and end the ugliness like that, there's no criminal trial.
No.
So.
And in fact, people will make the remark, as I've heard on more than one occasion, well, at least he had the common decency to save us the cost of a trial.
Well, there ain't much else good about it, but that doesn't prevent a whole lot of civil action. But there was no criminal trial. What else did we leave out? Did we leave out the Oklahoma City bombing in April? We left out the mass murder at Virginia Tech. That was in April. Holy cow. I mean, this is, I don't know. And then, of course, all this torture information. You know, you really sort of hit on it in a way when you talked about our ex-fearless leader. It's just the simple fact is that the last president we had was a sadist.
Yes. And I would say, as between the two, not a psychopath, but a sociopath.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And all his actions definitely, if people weren't clear on that before, there was no doubt after the cumulative effect of George Jr. made that pretty clear. I want to go back.
Well, can I just throw something out there with all of what you have cataloged about April?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have to throw this out there to the universe, but because it bears remembering. Maybe T.S. Eliot was onto something. Because, you know, he wrote The Wasteland in 1922 as a response to the horrors of spring in the trenches of World War I. And he wrote the following. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow, feeding a little life with dried tubers. Summer surprised us, coming over the Starnberger See with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in sunlight into the Hofgarten and drank coffee and talked for an hour. Bin gar keine Russin, stamme aus Litauen, ich Deutsch, and when we were children staying at the Archduke's, my cousins, he took me out on a sled, and I was frightened. He said, Marie, hold on tight, and down we went in the mountains. There you feel free. I read much of the night and go south in the winter. What are the roots that clutch? What branches grow out of this stony rubbish? Son of man, you cannot say or guess, for you know only a heap of broken images where the sun beats and the dead tree gives no shelter, the cricket no relief, and the dry stone no sound of water. I think he was on to something. Reverbo.
Wow. That's pretty heavy stuff.
Breeding lilacs out of the dead land.
Yeah, that's the line that, well, it's bittersweet. Well, it does have a leaves you with a slightly optimistic taste, I guess. You probably remember this, and it was one of the first times I ever found your show. It was one of the first shows, podcasts that I remember hearing. God, it was over a year ago now. Good Lord, where did the time go? But we're talking about this America, 183 water boards, and I guess, you know, that evidently wasn't, we didn't get anything out of him. I don't know. God, that guy must just be tough as nails. And I'm not, and I hate him, and I hate all the rest of the people that attacked me. Don't get me wrong, but there's something really, really queer about all this. And I use that word. It's too bad that some words got ruined out of our vocabulary. Some of them were pretty good, pretty descriptive, in a slang way. And of course now, but I'm getting off the subject. where I was going with this is that everybody knows that people lose their tempers. Everybody knows that when you're not looking, a cop is going to bust somebody in the head. And everybody knows this happens. And everybody knows when somebody ain't looking, you're going to just crack somebody across the mouth. And, yeah, maybe this happens a little too often, and maybe this kind of thing doesn't get punished enough, because how often do we really hear about people in law enforcement or in the military getting, you know, what's coming to them when they get caught being abusive and terrorizing people and going well past where a normal person should go. We don't hear about it too often. Most people kind of get away with this, and it's not good. But the difference is when you institutionalize losing your temper, and that's what we got going on here. That's the whole, you know, it's bad enough that we know what happens, but to make this policy, it's just unbelievable. And I remember...
It's beyond my comprehension, Reverbo. How in God's name can this be policy?
I know. Well, he's a sadist. He enjoyed it. He was waiting his whole life to my daddy wasted his political capital. By God, I'm not going to waste mine. I mean, you know, I wouldn't vote for a... I wouldn't... That entire family can just go live under a bridge and sell pencils for the rest of their lives, and that wouldn't be... That'd be fine with me. I mean, I wouldn't vote for any of them for $1 trillion. But I remember a show you did, and you will too, where you were doing... You reviewed this sad, sad situation of some cop somewhere who brought this kid in. Do you remember this? And proceeded to basically bash his head against the brick wall.
Yes, yes, that was in Ohio.
And I heard that, and I was just thinking, holy crap, I gotta keep my computer tuned to this guy. I've never heard this. Of course you remember it. It was horrific. It was harrowing. And I started thinking about that, and that's, if you make that, if that's in a freaking policy book, then Limbaugh joking, he pretends to slap himself on the air and goes, oh, that's torture, ha, 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 ha. Why don't we just take Rush's head and just slam it into that wall maybe, I don't know, 70 or 80 times, and maybe he'll...
Yeah, and it's so deep, you know. Kate, just before you, was talking about system stuff and not directly in terms of what we're talking about here, Reverbo. But it is this is systems analysis stuff. You know, I remember when the Abu Ghraib business first came out, and there was West Virginia poster girl Lindy England with a cigarette dangling off her lip and making a pantomime gun at some haji. And I was doing old-fashioned, old-school buggy whip terrestrial radio at the time. And I remember the right-wingers talking, Well, you know, all those sick justifications that I can barely even stand to think about, let alone have come out of my mouth. But I remember Dr. Bill O'Brien and me having a conversation and saying, us going back and forth discussing the fact that all those creeps that showed up in that military police unit from Maryland, including Lindy England, had been employed at a prison in Maryland. And all they did, Reverbo, was they took the techniques that they use in American prisons and transferred them to Iraq.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's why I keep talking about you can't say we're looking forward, because it's not looking good. Look forward, President Obama, but daggummit, you're going to be staring it right in the eye. This is how felons are treated in maximum security prisons in Florida, in maximum security prisons Angola, Louisiana, Mount Olive, West Virginia. This is how we treat, because this institution itself has become institutionally sadistic.
Inhumane.
There are more crimes against humanity committed in American prisons every day than we could count if we tried.
Trouble is, there's a certain percentage of, I don't know what to call these people. Leaders is evidently not the word. There's people this is like, they've been waiting all their lives to torture somebody, seems like to me. There's these wing nuts, some of them, again, it's the General Turgeson thing. They're just rubbing their hands together going, damn, I wish we could torture somebody. Well, you get the right president in there.
You can!
Hell, you can. You get an army.
You can do it 183 times to one human being in a month.
Yeah, go for it. You know, knock yourself out. You got a volunteer army that's hurting for recruits, so you can scrape the bottom of the barrel for
Lindy England. And the thing is, actually, Lindy England wasn't the bottom of the barrel.
No.
She was National Guard military police. Wow. You know, that was early enough that she was one of the good ones. That's before the Army started lowering its standards and saying, oh, what's that, son? You've only got 3 felonies and 2 of them are rapes? Come on in! That's before that happened.
Did that cop in Ohio ever get,
you know, I remember seeing something about it, but I never saw the final outcome.
I mean, all too often people, you know, once you get into the sadist inhumanity world, nothing ever turns out right. Nothing. But maybe you can help me on this. I'm a little hazy on the whole Nuremberg thing. What exactly is the criteria for legitimate defense? In other words, okay, they talk, and I'm going to be quiet here in a minute. I got to just finish the question. I thought it would have to do with legality, but does morality or ethics enter into this too? If you tell me I have to just slam this guy's head against the wall like 95 times, and I go, man, I don't know, Bob, that doesn't sound quite right. And you go, I don't know, the Attorney General said it was okay. And so I shrug my shoulders and walk away and get to work.
So, yeah, sadly,
well, I mean,
yes.
How does this work? And then later, do I get convicted of being a war criminal? I'm hazy on this.
No, because see, you're American. Therefore, you cannot be convicted of a war crime per se. Now, if you do something like a guy did, for instance, you've got 4 bound and defenseless Iraqis, and you go and put a bullet in the back of each one of them's head, you might face murder charges, but you will not face a war crime charge, even though it is one, and you will not face a crime against humanity charge, even though it is one, or a torture charge, even though up to the moment when you pull the trigger, it is one, because you're American. Okay? And I really, like I said earlier, I don't think there was a nudge and a wink at Nuremberg. Because one of the most telling lines coming out of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunals was the statement, "We are not punishing the German these high-ranking Germans because they lost the war. We are punishing these high-ranking Germans because they started the war," as I believe how it goes. Because the whole war was a crime against humanity.
Yeah, those judges, sometimes being in getting the right people in the right place at the right time makes all the difference in the world. One almost has to think that there's got to be something else going on with Obama and his people. I mean, you know that I worked for, and you know that I'm trying real hard to give him. I'm not giving him a pass, but.
But you're trying. You are trying to find in your own way.
I still think the guy's smart, smarter than everybody thinks.
I do too, and maybe too smart. But you're doing the same thing that our buddy David in Tennessee is doing, because I just got an email from him a few minutes ago. Let me run this past you and see if it resonates. David says, "With this nation so dumbed down and bumper stickered up by the right-wing hate speak machine, it is impossible for President Barack Obama to fight the proper fight. With the economic alligators around, all around, and the ruined, softened brains around the country that fight is one that would, without question, limit President Obama to one term as president. That said, dodging the fight, no matter the reason, will damage us over and over as the nation looks forward." So David concludes by saying, "This time, in this one instance, I'm hating the national resolve and process, or lack thereof, and not the player."
Well, there's the conundrum. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. I mean, but there could be more to it than that. Remember, it's just because Fox sticks a camera in somebody's face and a microphone in their mouth, that group is dwindling. That group lost. That group was overwhelmingly rejected by the majority of the American people. So although they are still putting up a squawk, they are marginalized, and they essentially don't count. I do wish they would quit sticking a microphone in their mouth. I agree with everything David said, except what if, and maybe I'm going way past things here, but maybe I'm not. Maybe this is somewhere on somebody's show, and that doesn't matter because we might have talked about it on your program. Someone is the idea that every president gets to go down in that little secret.
Yeah, the Bill Hicks moment.
Yeah, where they show you the film at Dealey Plaza, and they go, "Is there anything about this you don't understand? Do you have any questions?"
Hey, that's not the same angle as the Zapruder film. Oh.
No kidding.
Where do I sign?
Right. And what if they have... You remember when the concept of the leave-behinds, the concept of just because you're gone, there are still moles in the circus, moles in the organization.
Wasn't there some reporting about that in the last month, 2 months, about the fact that that Dick Cheney has left moles all over the government?
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, what if one of the moles? What if you take it even further? And what if they basically said, "Look, in this country, I can pass a law. I can say that everybody has to wear blue socks on Monday. Okay." And I'm the president, and the way the separation of powers works, not everybody does, because a lot of people were smoking cigarettes in the parking lot instead of in the class. But the ones who do know, we know how that all works. The judicial branch is going to enforce this, and until someone challenges it, it's the law. You got to wear blue socks on Monday until it's challenged and someone deems it unconstitutional, right? Until it is unconstitutional for me to torture you, I'm sorry, we're going to have to start the torture now. So I just wonder if like, I don't know, Roberts or somebody basically said, you can go after them all you want. We're never going to back you on this, ever. I mean, I don't know, but.
Well, and you know, you're leading me to a place, and I'm not faulting you, Reverbo. I'm not gooning on you. You're leading me to a place that I hate, because the presidency is a tough job. And if you are idealistic, if you have any idealism left in you, and I personally think that Barack Obama does have some idealism. And you see things that you want to do for the country, and you see healing work that you want to do for the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you cannot get it done in 4 years. You can barely even get it started in, you can barely get it started in 8, and then you have to pray like crazy that the guy who follows you is, shares some kind of mindset with you.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're sitting there, and you've got, and it's one of those up at 3 o'clock with the bullet sweat banging out of your forehead, thinking, you know, I can't let them get, they can't get, Jesus criminy, the German, all nuts. And then you have to come out and put on the brave face and say, well, we've got to look forward and not back, knowing at the same time that you are personally crapping on every value that you have in the slim hope that you can, in the larger scheme of things, change the nation enough to where the next guy won't have to blink at it and we can live under the rule of law again. Does that make any sense at all?
Except for the part, I guess I would prefer to think about it, instead of it's crapping on his principles, I would prefer to think that it is, that he hates this, that he would want to go after these people with every bone in his body.
Well, that's what I mean.
And he knows that there's no time for it. Now, I used to think, or at some point I thought, just get a team together. Just get some investigators and some attorneys and set them aside. And, of course, we'll have to round up some budget money for this. And I don't know. You know, the problem is that these wing nuts they're around every damn corner still, just trying to trip you up. But, I mean, we can do more than one thing at once, can't we? We can try to...
walk and chew gum at the same time? Sure.
No, I mean, you can try to go after them. But, I don't know. I like... you and I are singing the same song, and so is David. I can just see this, and he's going, "Oh shit! I'm gonna have to make priorities. I'm gonna have to get a list, and I'm gonna have to move things that I want, and things that we need. We have to separate them." Now, well, I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who made some speech about, you know, unless if you try, you got to try, even if you fail. I need to know my.
That's also Atticus Finch too.
Better than this. Yeah.
Sometimes you go in knowing you're licked, but you fight the fight because you got to fight the fight. But where anybody prior to FDR was concerned, it was a different argument. Because it's only after FDR that we get the Constitutional Amendment. What is it? The 24th? I can't remember. 22nd, that says 2 terms only, please.
Well,
no deposit, no return.
There you go.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think, and remember, that was driven through by a bunch of Republicans, okay? Who knew?
He'll be president.
Well, you know, I mean, and frankly, I think in the long view, Reverbo, I've come to the conclusion that that amendment was a mistake. And I thought it was, you know, I've had inklings that it was a mistake all along. Because, frankly, mortality and the nature of the job itself will keep all but the strongest from going for a third term.
They certainly didn't think to term limit Supreme Court justices. And that, I mean, if you're going to, I've heard very, very eloquent arguments that term limits are dumb. That term limits keep good people from serving. as you know, because if they're good, keep them. But the difference is, of course, that with Atticus Finch and Barack Obama is that on the one hand you've got this situation where you're trying to be true to yourself, and Barack Obama is responsible for 350 million people, and you got to sit okay. The family that's out of work, and by the way, we didn't even have any emergency unemployment extension on that budget. That's nice. So are they more interested in going after Gonzalez, or does that guy want his job back on the Chrysler line? And, you know, that question's easy to answer. You and I, you can do it, I can do it, and David can do it.
Yeah. And it does, but it does not for an instant jibe morally, Riv Robo. This just rolled in from horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, and he's absolutely correct. He says, "Love you, Bob, but what you guys are doing is called projection. You are projecting your feelings onto Obama." He says, "But you're good people," and it's true.
I'm not giving him a pass. It's different. I don't know. Your whole scene in Act Two, where he's sitting up in bed going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, what the hell am I going to do? I can't do it all. I mean, I can perfectly imagine that. Sure, that's... Yes, we are.
You ever seen Miracle on 34th Street? The original version, the black and white with Little Tiny Precious and Natalie Wood?
Probably a long time ago, yeah.
Maureen O'Hara plays her mom, and the the boyfriend interest, whatever, the male lead is a, well, there's a whole court drama over whether Santa Claus is real.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who played Fred Mertz, William Frawley, is a political fixer, and he's in the judge's chambers during the trial on the reality of Santa Claus. And he reminds the judge that he is elected by the people and that there is an election coming up. And the judge says, "But there's not a Santa Claus." And, you know, with his, you know, portly build and his cigar tucked in the corner of his mouth, he says, "That's right, Judge. You go out there and you rule that there's no Santa Claus. You go out there and rule that there's no Santa Claus. Oh, all the toy manufacturers are going to love you. And, of course, all the people that sell the toys, they're going to love you, too. And all those constituents of yours who suddenly have to explain to five-year-olds that they've been lying to them for 5 years or 10, they're just going to be crazy about you." And making it abundantly clear to the judge that, yeah, you can go do what reality is. But you are personally going to pay a price that I don't think you're prepared to pay. And frankly, I am projecting. Rick Goodner is absolutely correct.
Yes, that's what we're doing. Because we want to see this in the worst, worst way. I mean, America did...
I want to see Barack Obama in the best light. I'm trying to see him in the best light.
I mean, there's Kate going, "Well, you can distrust him now or distrust him later. I'll just take now." Well, I don't know. This is, and let's not forget that this is all Bush, all of it.
Yes.
I mean, let's not ever forget that.
These memos, and I just heard back from David in Tennessee. You know, these memos were not released by Bush. They were released by Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And David says, "By not redacting those torture papers, I think Obama lets us know that he wants to do more. The full version of the horrors being out there does a lot for us. Not as much as I want, but a lot." Maura writes in to say, "Forget political Obama. Get Holder. Obama's doing what he has to do politically. Not that I approve, but Holder has no excuse. People need to write to Holder and Congress." You know, God Almighty, why not? Why not? What? What? Why in the world, if you look at the Senate, Reverbo, why in heaven's name not go after at least Jay Bybee? We've said we're not going to have any prosecutions. We're not going to prosecute the people who
Waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed six times a day for 31 days. And we're not going to prosecute the people who wrote the memos. But Jay Bybee is a federal judge, and this creates, within the canons of judicial ethics, the appearance of impropriety. And under those circumstances, it is wholly unacceptable for the Senate not to convene impeachment proceedings against him, or the House, and then try him in the Senate. That's not prosecution. That's impeachment, and impeachment is a political tool.
It is a political tool. So where is the power to decide what's legal about legality? Can I make you all wear blue socks on Monday or not? And if I have a police force running around arresting you for not wearing them, can we prosecute those people if they thought it was legal? I mean, I'm all for...
Well, that's that meta law that they teach at Yale Law School. It really, really is.
That's the hazy part. I thought the people.
I mean, that's I guess
orders.
I guess it was over a year ago, maybe, or close to a year that Scott up in Massachusetts and I had a conversation that lasted probably 2 hours of the program about exactly this, about exactly the topic that you're raising, Reverbo.
Okay.
And that is the question of, how in God's name do you make an argument that this is legal? And what Scott's position was that's the whole point. That's the whole mindset. You see, you and I might look at the Constitution and see what appears to be black letter law, but the other side has a mindset that says, no, that's not black letter law. That just tells us how we can't do it. There's lots of ways that we can.
That's the way that it's always been.
And so consequently, you get these legal arguments. You know, you get blue socks on Monday. And it's,
well, you get people who can't drink out of water fountains who aren't share the color of your skin. You get people who can't get home, can't get mortgages in certain parts.
Sure, you get
all this crap.
You get decisions that seem to be earth-shattering, groundbreaking decisions rendered by the Supreme Court with phrases in it like, all deliberate speed. Remember that from Brown versus Board of Education? I think it's from Brown. That schools shall be desegregated with all deliberate speed.
Yeah.
And it turns out that all deliberate speed is oxymoronic, because deliberate and speed are antithetical to each other, because deliberate means slow. So what they've said is the school shall be desegregated with all slow speed.
Well, this is why people hate lawyers. Oh, God. Yeah, you got to spend a lot of money going to school to learn to write like that, man. And, oh, God, it has to be challenged. I don't know if it will be. It's easy for us to say it has to be. But, I mean, people have been torturing people since men and women have been born. People have been getting tortured and abused for 50,000 years. It just was never written in our policy book before. He at least got it out of there. One other quick thing, before I let you go, because this is all of this dovetails, and I wanted to talk about this tonight too, but there isn't time. We were talking. A big topic was hysterical extremism in the mass media, right?
Right.
And I was thinking that what they're doing is what they're doing with they're doing they're still doing with words what they were doing with torture and abuse. That's the same people.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And that's what they're doing. And I'll give you this sort of a paraphrase that I got off the Daily Kos on this. What you're doing, these people, there aren't that many of them left. But that's what I'm saying is rational people. I mean, who does this appeal to, this kind of crap? This appeals to the bottom feeder. This gives courage to the guy to pick up his gun, walk into a bank, and shoot 9 people. Because he thinks they're rich and they're liberal and they cost him his job. This is not like point counterpoint in Harper's or the Atlantic Monthly. This is hate and racism, plain and simple.
Yes, it is.
So So it's like what I'm just trying to heading toward is rational people. You and I will look at this group, right? These Nazis and racists and crazies, and we see criminals. And Newt Gingrich and his friends look at them and see what's left of his failed base. But what they're doing, what Hannity and what Coulter and what Savage and these people are doing, stirring the pot like this, essentially torture with words, in the way I look at it.
Yeah, it is. And I've actually got a Savage Wiener story for later in the evening if I get to it. But
anyway, God, yeah. There's so much to
Well, there is. And thanks for going down this path with me, Verbo, because
you opened it up. I mean,
yeah, but I can't pull it all together. I can't do that by myself. I can only talk about what's going on in my head. But then, you know, like what was it, Friday night, when David points out that it's not these things don't exist in a vacuum, that it's, you know, getting what it's you're waterboarded at 6 a.m. And after you're waterboarded for a while, well, before you were waterboarded, you were in a freezing cold room, locked up, soaking wet. So you're shivering and falling apart when they waterboard you. Then they take you and they put you in a room for 4 hours and they play Barney the Barney theme for you at 175 decibels. Then they take you out and bring you and waterboard you again, and then they take you back to the room that is burning up hot. Slam you into the wall a few times, beat your head against the concrete a little bit, bring you back again 4 hours later, waterboard you some more, and then they take you back to a room and put you in a 4x4 box and say, by the way, we're dropping in a spider.
Well before that, I'm going to predict that I won't be real good with that, and well before that, I'm going to give you those nuclear launch codes.
Well, it's like Susan said, long before that, he gave him Who Killed Cock Robin and confessed to kidnapping the Lindbergh baby.
But he didn't give them anything. They didn't get shit out of doing this. No, they didn't get squat.
No, that's the thing. After like one, two, three of these, Reverbo, you are into unmitigated, undeniable, 110% guaranteed, absolute, no questions about it, sadism and socio and psychopathology.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're not doing it because by this time, I mean, we'd have sat down and you'd have given us the list of agents in Bulgaria by now.
Yeah, well, you know, Mukasey and Hayden said, well, you know, he was one of the strong ones and he resisted several other forms of interrogation, and it was only after we did this that he gave us the information we needed to catch Ramzi bin el-Sheib, which was debunked months ago. But they're still repeating it as truth in the pages of the Wall Street Journal on Friday, and it goes back to Robert Perry's column that I was referring to, talking about the fact that a Republican can get in front of the for-profit media's microphones, cameras, and whatever, and say whatever crazier than a sprayed roach thing comes into their mind, and the for-profit media will go, my God, that is intellectual. Of course, it's got to be that way. Meanwhile, you get Ed Henry from CNN sitting there asking questions of Robert Gibbs saying, well, of course, the president's allies on the left want these people prosecuted. As if there's some gang of people out there with whistling the Internationale and flinging Molotov cocktails demanding prosecution for the sake of some... As if we are the sadists.
Oh, I know. They refer to things like this early disappointment with the Obama administration. Oh, yeah, so it's his fault that people were tortured. Right, we're mad at him because of what happened in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib. Okay.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, there we go.
Well, just again, it's very hard to fight when this is unprecedented, at least in my lifetime. This kind of crap, you used to hear at KKK rallies. This is the kind of stuff that Timothy McVeigh...
This is John Birch stuff.
Right, this is campfire stuff for McVeigh. This was never on the mass media. This was in street protests. This was in fringe... This is in fringe stuff everywhere. But it is not coming out of my television. This was coming out of some the reddest, the most redneck little piece of crap radio station somewhere in Tennessee. This is not coming out of Fox before. This is absolutely remarkable to me.
Yeah, it is. It's just stunning. Reverbo, thanks a million, brother.
Okay, well, make it personal as if we have to keep saying that.
I think at this point it is, but it doesn't mind repeating.
He's got a real good job, and his shirt and tie is nice. But I remember a time when she would never even look at him twice. Later,
Reverbo. Bye now. We'll find some time for that tune somewhere down the road. It's too good to pass up. And let's see. Keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Anybody there? All right, I'm going to put you back on hold and see if somebody else is somewhere else. Okay, I'm going to figure out how this thing works yet. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, 183 times. That's, what is that, four times a day plus an extra one on Sunday?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to, like I said, it baffles me, Albert, and I'm trying to think about, well, you know those little street carnivals and stuff, and there's fundraisers, and you got to go sit in the dunking booth for 3 hours or whatever. I've done that. And you know you're going to get wet. The first time, the second time, the third time, and the 15th time. And usually there's some little sadistic, see, there we go again, who buys, you know, it's three softballs for a dollar.
I got 20.
Or 20 for a five. And you got a guy, you know, and you got the guy who steps and says, here's my Abraham Lincoln. And they delight in seeing how many times they can get you soaked. And you're sitting there, and you know it's coming, and you know it's all in good fun. And yet every time that lever pushes and every time that bench breaks under your ass, it's a brutal shock. And that's for fun.
Well, what did Christopher Hitchens, who used to, he used to be talking nonsense for a while, he lasted a whole about 2.1 seconds. So, it is hideous, and I don't know who's to blame. I feel like blaming somebody, you know.
And that is not an irrational thought, Albert.
Because it's, you know, it's everything that you get. Everybody's talked about. I mean, this is outrageous. I mean, this is outrageous. I mean, you know, they love how they use the words, like you said, you know, deliberate speed, and they love using the words like, you know, it's an abomination about, you know, homosexuality. When in reality, if this isn't an abomination of what little boys and girls are taught about the red, white, and blue, I don't know what is. You know, I mean, not for nothing, you know, there's more than just Nuremberg as a precedence here. I mean, Bush should be tried under Nuremberg because that was war of aggression. I'm pretty sure Nuremberg didn't have much to do with
it. Right, we're not punishing you because you lost. We're punishing you because you started it.
Exactly. You know, that was the crime against peace, you know. And certainly he is without doubt guilty of that, and so is Cheney, and so is Rumsfeld, and so is everything else like that. But, you know, we only hear about 1 month, and we only heard about two guys.
Right. This is just what's out. There's not only four memos.
I mean, are we serious? I mean, all right, if waterboarding is, oh, that's okay. What about brass bowl? You know what that is? You know what torture of the brass bowl is? That's where you get a nice brass bowl and some nice hot coals and some nice hungry mice or rats, and you put those on someone's belly, and then you cover them with the bowl. The bowl has a nice little seal around it, and then you put the hot coals on top of the brass bowl, and then, you know, the mice, feeling the heat, scurrow the only way they can. You
down.
Know, these are tortures that, you know, you're down and out and everywhere, and they crawl around in you, and, you know, I mean, what's next? I mean, you know, why not? Why not? If we could sit there and, you know, mimic drowning and freezing and, I mean, God, these people have no respite. They're the only thing they're trying to do is crack them.
Well, yeah.
Without, I mean, this is...
No, well, no, by saying crack, you indicate, and I'm not faulting you, I'm not faulting your reasoning, but when we say what they are trying to do, this was not torture for information purposes. This was punishment absent legal proof of guilt. You can't get around the fact, Albert, that this was punishment.
I agree. No, I certainly agree. I mean, but you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm just thinking of the policy. You know, I'm thinking of somebody who can be a little like man or whatever and try to rationalize it. You know, like, all right, why, you know, if we're not going to get any good information, what are you going to want to do? You're going to want to break them. You know, and they do it to everybody. I mean, they said, cops, they do it in the prisons. They do it in the jails. They do it. I mean, we jail the most amount of people in the whole world. We jail more people per capita than China. And China, man, God, you're caught with a joint in China. They take you out to some ditch and blow your head off with an AK-47 while two guys hold you. You know, I mean, come on now. I mean, then they take your skin and put it into all those collagen products that the ladies over here, you know, sell in almost a Fight Club thing, but not quite. You know, I mean, these are the horrors.
The first rule of cosmetics is...
Don't ask, yeah. You'd rather watch sausage and laws being made than figure that crap out. But, you know, no, you're exactly right. It's sadistic. It's criminal. This is like Vlad the Impaler kind of crap. I mean, you know the tapes are being made. You know it is. You know Jeff Gannon and Dick Cheney and George Bush are laying in a oily, greasy bed together, eating chicken wings, watching these videos, getting off on it. You know that's the kind of scene that's going down. Where the hell else was Jeff Gannon in there all these times and hundreds of times? And God, he must have been there for every. He was there for every Khalid Sheikh Mohammed waterboarding of the month. I mean, come on, what is that? What kind of sick? You know they're doing it. They got death squads on one hand, they got torture on the other hand, and you know that's the outrageous thing. You know, Barack Obama, dude. Let them take you. If they're going to sit there and show you an alternative viewpoint of the Kennedy assassination, you know what? You're doomed. I mean, you want to be a slave? You want to be living on your knees? Or do you want to stand up for what's right and be remembered by a history of showing people and humanity the direction we need to be? You know, it's nice to look forward, and we should look forward on coal and look forward on solar panels and the energy and, you know, trying to get us out.
250-mile-an-hour trains and absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look forward on this bullcrap monetary policy while we're at it as well, because that's just a losing game, period. You know, I ain't talking no communism. I'm talking we need to get rid of all these isms. Capitalism is dead. It looks good on paper. It's dead. It's gone. It's completely destroyed. So what is he going to do? I mean, does Barack Obama really want to be the guy with a Band-Aid at the dike? Is that what he wants to be as that wall busts in his face? You know, it makes me laugh, and there's other kinds of things that, you know, we can talk about, too, and, you know, you don't want to get me too upset regarding this torture, or this won't even be fit for the Internet. My mouth will start running. But I'll tell you, and that's saying something, you know, when we sit here and look, you know, at the way people want to try to make money, you know, like, for example, I don't know if you know anything about the UFC, and I've been talking about it here and there. I got to get back into it. I used to watch it. I got my little girls going to martial arts now, so they can be assassins. I'm going to pretend that one dies. I hope nobody ever hears this. And I hope that I'm going to pretend that one dies, and then that way the other one always has an excuse of where they are, and they never know which one's doing what. You know, little assassin squad. But anyway, that's my little fantasy. But anyhow, so I've been watching that kind of stuff, and you know, the UFC gets a pay-per-view per year of $5 billion, okay? That's a healthy sum of money. And not for nothing, it's going to replace boxing and all the other in terms for combat sports, where it's already done it. So we're looking at $5 billion, and what is one of the things they want to do? Now, this is related to this as well, but this is just another angle on it. What do they want to do? They want to go and crack down on the Internet streams of it. Now, see, the Internet, you know, the Internet is, that's the beauty of it. You see, if it wasn't for the Internet, there wouldn't be the fans that go to the bars and order the pay-per-views at home. There wouldn't be that, okay? Because it's like, you know, when you sit there and you give something away like that, okay, that makes people like it. You know, granted, watching these events on the internet is like looking, you know, through a knot hole and the, you know, left field somewhere in a baseball stadium. It's not the best seats. Yeah, you get a feel for the game. I mean, but you didn't really get to, you know, enjoy it in high definition and all that other stuff. You know, when you pay, there's got to be bonuses there. But to keep it out of the hands of everybody, of all the fans, that's just cheating yourself in the long run, which is exactly what Barack Obama's doing by keeping justice out of the hands of humanity. You know, I don't care what kind of scumbag bastard Khalid Shalit, I don't care who the hell he is. I don't even know who the hell this guy is. And I don't care what he's done.
There
you
go. You
don't do that to somebody. You don't do that. Period. I mean,
You don't do it, Albert, not because of what it does to him, but because of what it does to you.
Exactly. That's a price that I'm not willing to pay. I'm not paying that. I'm not going to sit here and pay to have somebody waterboarded, you know, 10,000 times in a year. Or whatever the hell, or any of these people. I don't want people sitting in gas masks with duct tape around their hands and orange jumpsuits and, you know, sitting there looking at a fence all day long. I don't care what they've done or where they've been. Man, stick them in jail, lock the door, slide a tray of food, and never talk to them again. I don't know. You know, you don't, you know, it's just hideous. And not for nothing, I'd also like to point out the fact, yeah, sure, it's Hitler's birthday. Yeah, sure, we do this and that. But not for nothing, it is 420. It's also Earth Day, and this would be, I guess, humanity's real tea party. That's today. It's underground, everything else like that, but...
Good observation. Good observation.
You know, so that's what we got. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking when we talk jiu-jitsu. I mean, we got to sit here and turn these negatives around. Look forward, fine, but we still need to clean up our backyard. You know, he says look forward, you know, and I can say look forward, too. But I still have a backyard to clean up this winter after, and a front yard to clean up this winter after, and wiring to get done in my house. I can look forward all I want. I still have work to do. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, come on. Well, who are you kidding? Who are you kidding that, all right, you don't do it anymore? You still put the frickin' fire out. You still got to sweep the slime down the drain. And
yeah, we don't do it. We did it. You know, I mean, tell me one other circumstance, Albert. Tell me one other circumstance where I ain't going to do it no more gets you off for what you already did.
Well, it never gets you off.
Speeding?
No. Oh, hell no. That never gets you off because the first
double
thing
parking?
No, that won't work.
Petty larceny?
That don't work. But
arson? Rape?
Nope,
murder?
That don't work. That don't work.
Bribery?
Either. Nope.
Perjury?
Well, maybe. No.
Okay, bribery.
Doing the bribing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends. If you're doing it, you, Bob Kincaid, doing the bribing, you're done. George Bush and Poppy Bush, you know, he's got that idiot thing down pat. I can't believe the filthy friends this guy has. It's amazing, dear friend. You know, if anybody ever wants to go do some real digging and sliming, they got the thigh highs, at least thigh highs, and you might want to snorkel as well. Go look at the friends that the Bush family just happens to have over the years. And, you know, that's probably a big part of why we're not seeing it. I mean, I haven't heard nothing from George W. Bush. And
well, I heard something about him today. And this is I read this earlier, Albert, and it's one of those things that just, well, I do a lot of running out into the yard screaming. I just do. Neighbors are used to it.
You ran out of TVs, huh?
Yeah. Got a little pricey. Just to come up with the list, we cannot depose George Bush about torture. We cannot depose George Bush about wiretapping. We can't depose George Bush about domestic spying. We can't depose George Bush about an illegal war. We can't okay, so we got a long list of what we can't depose George Bush about. But, a judge has ordered that George Bush sit for deposition relating to whether or not he had any knowledge of the fact that Southern Methodist University allegedly strong-armed some condominium owners in Dallas to get them to sell cheap where they want to build the George Bush Library.
Like I said, I went right out into the yard.
Well, I hope. I hope there's some cameras there. And my God, there's a lot of work we need to get done. I mean, George Bush isn't just forgetting to rake the leaves from under the oak tree, you know, before the winter. You know, this guy's, you know, toxic zone is just unbelievable. And, you know, all right, I don't know. You know, I could see why Obama, well, of course, he's running for his fourth, you know, second term already. You know, he's running for another 4 years. And, you know, we'll see what he gets done. I mean, it twists my guts. I'm about to train my dog. It's going to be Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Emanuel, because I never liked him. I don't care. He doesn't seem to me to be a real straight shooter, and he seems to be too orchestrated for, I just don't trust him. Sorry, I never have. And he just seems real tri-faced or something. But then it's going to be Obama, and, you know, it's going to be one of those things. I don't want the guy's name to become a curse word in my house. You know, I don't want to have to sit there and, you know, say Bush, Obama, you know, like that. I don't want to have to ever do anything like that. I don't want to drop an octave on him. But, you know, this is a tough one to swallow, man, because this is a big deal. This is a real big deal. And like it's like almost like, but we don't do it anymore, so no big deal.
And it is a big deal. And I think you and David from Tennessee are arguing something similar. I just had another email roll in from him. And I love the way we can have, you know, two or three or four or five party dialogues via email, chat room, yada. That's just one of those things that's so cool about what we're doing. But anyway, shameless moment of promotion aside, David writes, let's be clear about this terrible dilemma, re-chasing or not chasing down the torture crowd. And what David says is as follows. If we throw in the towel on Obama and give up on him in total, we are so F-worded. To give up on some good coming from Obama while wishing for all the good, we've handed the country over to the evil right. Game over, our really big game. So, of course, many of us hang on to the idea that Obama will do more good than bad. We're not willing to abandon the country to the other side.
I mean, this is a point. I mean, this is without doubt a valid point, because what can you imagine where we'd be if McCain was in there? Can you imagine what we'd be doing? My God, he'd be hanging, drawing, and quartering these people during breakfast. I mean, so there is that to consider.
And that's what I said Friday night, Albert. It smells like a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that isn't a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. If you put it under the rubric of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a la anywhere that's ever had some crazy ass mad psychopathic dictator running loose, and the only alternative is to have people at each other's throats, witness what went on, end of apartheid and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission down there that was a model for the world. If you formally frame it in that way and you immunize everybody and you say, look it, we're going to sit down, we're going to talk about what we did, and we're going to make damn sure that we never do it again. That's how you do that. And you know what? I don't think I or anybody else would be particularly bent if that's what we did. Start serving the subpoenas and start bringing people in and let them tell the truth as they know it.
Brick by brick. Yep. Let's take it apart brick by brick.
You know, let Michael Mukasey and Michael Hayden sit in there and talk about how nobody really understands the real value of torture. Let them do it. I mean, that Wall Street Journal column on Friday, really honest to God, Albert, was a written, signed confession.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what, you know, well, maybe he's playing the right game. You know, I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt again, all right, because he does, you know, I even give him benefit of the doubt on some of my own personal issues that he may not move fast enough on. I understand that. He's got, you know, a second term to worry about, and he's got a lot of work to do, okay? And he's probably not going to do any of the work, a lot of the work that needs to get done, and especially in this first half here, but it's one of these things, man, maybe he's going to take it slow. Maybe the American people, we need to relax a little bit and put out into the universe that, you know, everybody needs to get caught up to this, okay, that maybe perhaps like they do in Milwaukee when I was there, they have these white bricks. Have you ever seen that? It's like a natural, they're cream colored. And like, man, they're worth, you know, if a normal brick house that you build is $2 a brick, you know, these bricks are like $22 a brick. You know, and they don't make them anymore because the clay is gone. So maybe that's how we have to do something. We have to take this apart underneath the Bush throne. We have to take that whole pedestal apart, brick by brick. Everybody gets to inspect it. Everybody gets to hear. Maybe they're sick of it. I don't care. The more outraged you get, I don't know, for me, the more outraged I get, the more fire in my belly becomes. The more I want to fight these people, the more I want to see justice, the more I want to see these kinds of things. So, I mean, let's do it. Let's do it real nice and slow. Take it apart, atom by atom. Everybody gets to see. And then maybe, you know, spaghetti monster willing or whatever you want to talk about, maybe. At the second half of his next presidency, people are just utterly demanding it, forcing him to do what needs to get done. Maybe that's what, you know, I think in a sense, it's just like with guns. You know, the real change has to come in the heart. It has to come into the mind. You know, I mean, and I ain't worried about the tool. Worry about the person who's wielding that tool. You know, I worry about, you know, somebody's heart about this. You know, we have to change. We have to sit here and demand it. These people in power, man, they got all the money. They got all the power. They got all the resources. And this is bullcrap. This is our planet. This is our spaceship, too. And I think we need to, in a sense, step up ownership of it by doing that and demanding certain ways of behavior and certain aspects of where we want to go. You know, I think a lot of time, I don't think a lot of people know where to go. You know, I say, oh, man, capitalism's dead, but what's next? What do you say? What's done? You know, I mean, think about this, Bob. Machines are replacing. You know, not for nothing. Technology, and this is in the zeitgeist. You should watch this. It says three parts now. You definitely should watch them, the zeitgeist movies, okay? But machines are replacing human labor. They do it better, they do it faster, and they do it more efficiently, okay? Computers are getting better and better and better. And all we're really seeing is technology choked. Because if our technology that we have is ever really unleashed, nobody's going to be able to work. Okay? There's not going to be no need for it. Because you can build cars with a freaking robotic factory, and you can build machines and everything you ever wanted to do with, you know, cybernet. That's what it's like, a cybernetting kind of thing. And granted, this, you know, these things give me shades of, you know, the Cylons and the Terminators and all that other stuff, you know, so we need some prime directives, you know, the Fight Club type prime directives where human life shall never be, you know, you'll never do an action that would cause damage to human life, and scene number two is number one, you know. Don't talk about Fight Club, that kind of thing. So we do need to understand that where we are is a precipice of a whole new epoch of human advancement, of human civilization. Our old way of doing things won't work anymore. Our machines are too advanced. We're not going to have the workers. Man, look at what happened when they did the Philly for steel. Look at America when we were doing steel from 1996 to 2006. Right, we had a fraction of the 179,000 workers that were steel workers in this country. We had a fraction of that at 79,000, yet they produced they went from 80 metric tons of steel to 120 metric tons of steel produced. I mean, you know, you sit there and you think, and with less people, they're producing more. With machines producing more, so there's a lot of things that, you know, they're trying to juggle, and that I think there's a lot of these things that they shouldn't be juggling, and I think there's a lot of things that, you know, everybody needs to get educated on. We got to stop, you know, we not only can't be sitting here standing up for torture, we also can't sit here and think about purchasing machines that break down in 5 years because the market needs to grow and the economy needs to grow. Who the hell can afford to sit here and replace a washing machine every 5 years? These things, we need to start building the, and if you ever take one of these washing machines apart, I know I'm rambling, but if you ever take one of these washing machines apart, you'll see fault spots. It's almost like perforated lines, man. They'll put little
holes. I have.
I mean, you know, it's just like, well, you're designing these things to fail. Well, if we can design things to fail, we can also design things to be sustainable and design things to be last forever. And, you know, so there is a lot of educating human beings got to get done. There's a lot of fear we have to overcome and let pass through us and over us. I mean, we have a lot of work to do, and I don't think you or I even know the whole grasp of it. And I don't think we could talk for another 184 days and come to completion of all the things that we really need to take account to a population that's been pretty dumbed down for a long time. You know, I mean, even myself, I can only see, all right, well, where the hell do we go from here? You know, granted, you know, we have a lot of cleaning up to do, so I don't know, maybe people can start taking care of the spaceship a little better, but, you know, we got to give the guy a benefit of the doubt. He's got a huge job. You know, I don't think we're going to, you know, we can't survive another 50 years like this in the way our system's going. You know, so it's probably fitting that we have him where he is right now, that we have been torturing to the, I mean, it's fitting. This is the time for us to get caught. This is the time for us to change, like, seriously. And he can't really do it all. He needs us to really be educated and be behind him on it, you know, and that's, you know, we have to force him to do these things. Like, what's that guy said? Make me. What, FDR, right? He said, make me
yeah,
do these things.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we have, you know, and the way that we do that is we talk to, you know, I mean, I have a neighbor lady, and she was like, you know, she's a little bit older than me, but I'm chatting with her, and, you know, I brought up the whole point of, you know, isn't it funny that, you know, we went to war with Saddam Hussein, and now we voted a guy with the middle name Hussein. She's like, yeah, that worries me. Of course, you know, I haven't been able to see.
You should not have done that.
She's a nice lady. She's a nice lady. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to jump on her like I would have 8 years ago. But, you know, it's a vicious, not sexual. Okay, anyway. So, you know, I would have been vicious and nasty and just been like, oh, are you crazy? What are you, stupid? Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I've evolved. I've changed a little bit and I've matured, I'd like to think, and to a point. And, you know, I sat there and I kind of tried to ease her down from that. Ease her down from sitting there trying to say, oh, I'm afraid because his name's Hussein. You know, and it's like, yeah, you know, it's just by education. Education, education, education. We really need to educate each other. We educate ourselves. We can't ever stop, you know, and that's the other thing. You know, she said, well, the more I think, the more I'm going to know. I'm scared that I'm going to forget. You know, and it's like people that worry about, you know, it's like they stay up nights worrying about winning the Powerball. Oh, what am I going to do? Am I going to spend the money? You know, we got to get there first. And
well, amen to that. And you know, you mentioned the founding fathers. You know, there is that. And I can't help note, you know, the fundies like to walk around with those little rubber bands around their wrists that say WWJD.
Yeah.
Maybe we need some that are red, white, and blue that say WWFFD. What would the founding fathers do? Or WWFD, what would the framers do? Because they had lived with a situation, as was pointed out to me by our buddy Mora, they had lived with torture situations. And they were most explicit on what was not to be done. And they tried to put it in as simple a language as could be dealt with. And yet you get these geniuses who say, well, no, clearly their intent was... And, you know, well, we've got to be an originalist, or unless it doesn't suit us, and then we'll say, well, when the answer is very clear, if you could transport Thomas Jefferson into the future or yourself into the past and ask, and just say, look, Tom, here's what went down. TJ. And have Franklin there, too, and just bring in a barrel of wine, you know, because they drank a couple of gallons a day, those guys. But
uh-huh.
You know, not to mention the laudanum.
Mm-hmm. Or the things they used to pack in their pipe.
Yeah, right. But anyway, just, guys, here's how it is. I'm from 2009. What? Well, we figured it'd be easier for me to come back to here than you to see what's become of it. But I got to ask you guys a question. So we got this guy, and you look at TJ, and you say, he's kind of like one of your Barbary pirates. He goes, well, yes. Well, we caught him, and here's what we did. We drowned him till he was almost dead 6 times a day for a month before he was ever tried or convicted of anything. And you could just hear, you can hear Tom going, you, sir, are a brigand. You're a poltroon. And you say you're a citizen of the nation that we put together. Sir, let me get my white glove and beat you to death, and I will meet you on the field of honor in a matter of moments. You know, no kidding. I mean, it's kind of cutesy and stuff, but it's true.
It is true. That's what's funny about it. You know, I mean, it is outrageous, and we have fallen quite some ways. But, you know, I mean, heck, it's still winter in Wisconsin. I'm still waiting for spring, buddy. So, I mean, you know, I think if you were to talk to most people in the street and explain these things or say this to them, I mean, maybe you, maybe you're a little different, but, you know, I mean, even out here where I'm at, you know, and then you guys are right, you know, and I forget her name. I'm so bad with names. Anyway, she brought up the whole point of, you know, locality and,
Kate.
You know, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like, that is true. I mean, and she'll never be a Southerner, you know, and it's just not going
to
happen. You
don't know that she wants to be, but she wants to have a passing understanding of the culture.
And I understand and appreciate that. I live in the same thing. I mean, I'm not from here, but, I do live with, you know, people that they don't, you know, you're not local. They know you're not local. My kids will never be local. They were born here and they won't be local. You know, so it's, you know, I understand that whole concept, but, you know, that's why I say you talk to the everyman in the street. And, you know, I always go for the empathy, I guess. I always try to put other people in other people's shoes. So when I do converse with them, and, you know, so it makes it easier to understand, you know, because I don't think schools train people to think empathetically. You know, they don't train people to even use their emotions, which is why, you know, we got all these worthless drug ads on TV and everything else like that. And people don't even know that, sometimes you do feel down. Sometimes you do feel happy. Sometimes you feel like totally desperate, you know, but there's ways you got to, you know, suck up your breath. And you just kind of got to grit down sometimes and get past these things and, educate people like that. And also explain to them, you know, heck, do you think that that's a smart idea? You know, you got to phrase your questions in a lawyerly way, I guess. You know, there are good things about lawyers in that respect, but, you know, nobody can support that. Only the freaks that go out with, you know, that don't even know what teabagging is and they can't spell moron. You know, only those kinds of people sit there and say stupid crap like that. Rush Limbaugh, you know, people who either they got money involved with it or they think one day they're going to have money. You know, those are the only kinds of freaks that do crap like that. You know, tough guys, you know, oh, yeah, I torture them just like I'm 24. You know, I mean, you know, but, you know, they'll talk about 24 and then they'll same breath, Jew-run media, you know, and everything else. Like, you know, come on. These guys are all like that. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, we know better than that. You know, we behave better than that. We behave differently than that. And that's, you know, and I think that they're not, I don't think they're the mainstream. I think they're so deluded to think they're the mainstream that, you know, we just keep our mouths shut. But we already won an election. You know, people are aware now. You know, more people are aware thanks to George W. Bush being a bloodthirsty freak than would have been if it was, you know, not for nothing, Al Gore. You know, I've been a little bit different, but, you know, it was still the same kinds of, you know, the banality would have been toned down, but it would have still been evil. These kinds of things happened under Clinton. Let's not be silly and sit there and say all of this. You know, this is why it's such a big, big thing. It's such a big problem that we have a lot of things that we need to really overcome. The economy, the way we do economies, the way we build things, the way everything that we do, we have to change everything. I mean, we literally need to evolve and make that next step. We need to step not on land, but, you know, in space. We need to do a lot of stuff that, you know, I don't think a lot of people are even aware that these things happen. Probably a lot of people don't even know who the hell, what waterboarding is, even to this day. You know, and that's a sad thing to say, but, you know, I'm sure that there are.
Yeah, and what's more, you know, we've got all those other fun little words, as we've discussed. Less people know what walling is. Walling? Walling? It doesn't sound so bad. Until your head lands, until your head is driven into the concrete, it doesn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bugging. You know, bugging used to mean when a Republican put an electronic listening device in your office or your scotch bottle or, you know, your wife's underwear drawer. Now it means being put soaking wet, freezing cold, half out of your mind into a 4x4 foot box. Dump, you know, and now we're going to put in the dreaded brown recluse. What? Hey, Fred, what's Arabic for brown recluse? Don't worry about Arabic. Just tell him the Arabic for camel spider. That'll do. Oh, yeah, great.
I'm sure they probably dose him up with some crazy drugs as well. that probably totally detach their mind.
Yeah, so that so the spider can talk?
Boy, I who knows? Who knows the horrors that these intelligence agencies have? I mean, you know, that's a rabbit hole. Man, we need to put some dynamite in that rabbit hole. I'll tell you right now, because with these intelligence agencies, you know, just opening people's eyes to that is such, you know, I don't care. I don't care, man. You can sit there. I hope you guys are listening. I don't consider CIA heroes at all. They're criminals in action to me. Those people are just, you know, they're the SS. These people are, you know, like the, who's doing these dirty deeds? Who's sitting there, you know, fomenting revolution, causing all these freaking problems? You know what I mean? And you know, we say, oh, we got to pretend, oh, they should communicate more. Nah, bull crap. Man, you sit there and you look at history. Just look at the last 50 years of this country or 60 years of this country. The intelligence agencies have done nothing but hamstrung the progress in the world, progress for this country, Bay of Pigs, Iran, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Venezuela. I mean, you name it.
Oh, yeah, and there's a big hissy because President Obama stopped and said something besides, die commie scum, to Hugo Chavez. Did you catch that one?
You know,
well, you know, first he was bowing to the Saudi king, and now he's making nicey with Hugo Chavez, and he wants to open up relations with Cuba, and I can't tell. Somebody do something.
What the? But see, that's the thing. Someone show these people what the hell kind of world they live in. You know what? And I want to see. You know, I've seen the revolution will not be televised. I already know the dirty tricks that they've been pulling with Hugo Chavez since he first got elected.
Well, there is that, yes.
Under the old system, okay? I mean, if you watch the revolution will not be televised or will be televised, the revolution will be one of those. If you watch that, you will see U.S. troops in the presidential after the coup. This crap was planned. How could you say, I mean, and I would like to see, I've heard a lot of accusations, but I would really like to see some evidence to Mr. Chavez's dictatorial powers and how he's doing things like, you know, he just barely shut down a channel in his country that makes Fox News look like, you know, Nickelodeon. I mean, like the crap that this channel was pulling is unreal. I mean, the literal assassination.
This just in, Hugo Chavez just cooked and ate a baby.
Oh,
yeah, I know. Yeah.
You know, he's doing witchcraft and everything else. And then people will tell you, oh, yeah, Hugo Chavez is horrible. Look at what this news is. It's his own country. It's like, are you kidding me? The patience that guy has is unbelievable. I'd love to see. I'd love to know. What has he done that's been so horrible? What has he done that
he offended the rich people? He acted like poor people, the campesinos. He acted like poor people are people just like rich people are.
Yeah.
And that is an unpardonable sin, Albert.
Yeah, I know. That's why our whole system has to change. This is bullcrap. You know, we have an unlimited amount of resources on this planet. We cannot put systems in. Just like we can't build Hummers all the time, we can't have systems that require infinite growth. We just can't. You know, we're lucky. We're real lucky. We're lucky things like people do research on organic agriculture, and now they get the yields of organic agriculture up to the yields that you would see with the conventional petrochemical. That is such big news, because that means that when oil runs out, and trust me, mark my words, trust me when I tell you, oil is going to run out. And when we run out of it, that means that the whole world isn't going to starve, because now we know how to use a little cow poop and some leaves and some grass and get the same kind of yields that we would get. Yeah, maybe it's a little more work, all right, but we can get the same kind of yields from our organic, healthy for the earth, healthy for the people. We can do these things and still feed everybody. You know, now we know these kinds of things. I mean, this is why I say we're lucky, that's what I mean. You know, that we finally realize and we discover this sacred knowledge. It's sacred knowledge. Isn't that sacred knowledge? Isn't it when the first little monkey found that she was most likely a female, discovered that she could put seeds into a ground, or discovered where they threw their old fruits and everything, that the more plants that they could eat, they grew grow there. And the next thing you know, they start planting corn and this and this and this and that, and now they actually have an agriculture. That's sacred knowledge. I mean, if we don't have clean water, clean food, clean air, what the hell do we have? You got a shiny new washing machine that lasts 5 years. You got an economic system that, you know, totally gets you raped by, and I know I'm saying that's rape. To totally rape countries and to totally destroy and just utterly just devastate the environment that you live in. How is that having something? That's not having anything. It's like having freaking the mumps and leprosy and everything else like that. That's not something worth having. It's not something worth fighting for. It's not even something even worth entertaining on television. It's a bad thought, bad ideas, stupid way to go, and there's no future there. Sorry.
No, I
it just pisses me off. Because, you know, I care. You know, I care about everybody that I look at. Every time I sit there and I look at somebody as an individual, I care about them. You know, I mean, they might be scum. They may call bomb threat. I'm looking at a guy's house that the stupid idiot called a bomb threat. He was in the national news. He called the bomb threat a day after 9/11. You know, but still, I don't want to see him tortured. I don't want to see, come on. I mean, he's a Bubbles. If anybody's seen Trailer Park Boys, they know who Bubbles is. Well, I got Bubbles across the street, but dumber than Bubbles. You know, I mean, I care. I don't want my kids having a world like this. This is bullshit. I'm sorry. It just is. You know, these people are rich. You know, different rules apply for them. Oh, they can say, oh, this guy does this and this guy does that. No, there's no future there. It's like trying to say the stupid crap that scientists talk about. And I know I'm rambling now, but now they want to bring a Kuiper Belt object and shift the orbit of Mars. Yeah, that sounds smart. We could barely make a satellite go out into space without having it crash into our frickin' sun. And we're going to go bring objects into the solar system to shift other planets. What are you talking about? See, that's the stupidity of just... I'm sorry. That's the stupidity of everything. That
yeah, it's okay. Don Blankenship's got somebody working on mining the asteroids.
That I don't have a problem with. He can mine all the asteroids he wants. That would make me feel better personally. You know, and heck, that would be great. Heck, if we could mine asteroids, we don't breathe space. You know, I mean, come on. You know, that makes sense to me. Now he's making sense, but I don't think Don Blankenship would make that much sense. It only makes sense when it's something evil. Just like all these other bastards. They're evil, man. You know, they like their system and they don't want to see it changed. And, you know, we're the ones that go along with it and we're the ones that got to educate each other about it, you know. We can't keep wiping our butts with our future, you know. We can't keep using old growth forests for toilet paper and we can't keep, you know, putting CAFOs in and blowing mountains all up. I mean, we just can't keep doing this crap. We don't got enough. There isn't enough earth for everybody to live the way we've been living.
And more than enough us. And more than enough us. Albert, I'm going to roll on. I'm going to roll on, brother. But yeah, what a wealth of information you've brought.
I just want to say, with the technology that we have, if we embrace it, everybody can live an even better life.
Oh, okay, little moment. I had an appointment today down at the local doc's office. And so, you know how the nurse comes in and does the physical and the history and everything. And I said, you know, I saw some magnificent news today. And, oh, really? What? I said, yeah, magnificent medical news. Really? What? I said, well, there's news out of England. They have found a way to cure the single leading cause of adult blindness. Really? Yeah, adult macular degeneration. Yeah? Mm-hmm. The company's already gotten behind it, and they're going to start doing it. Well, what is it? I said, they're using stem cells. Now, I can't be sure, but I heard a sort of a, oh. And, of course, all over America, because it's not nearly so prevalent in the rest of the world, but all over America, people say, stem cells? They're going to cure blindness with stem cells? And I got an email from our buddy Maura. For the first time ever, Focus on the Family has opened a Washington office. And this is a little bit of hyperbole, Albert, but it's only a little bit of hyperbole. It won't be long until we hear people crying and moaning about all them people who got their blindness healed and now they're walking around with little fetuses in their eyes.
Yeah, but you see, this is an anomaly, and I will leave it with this, Bob. I know it's been one of those. You know, That's how much ground they have to stand on. That's I mean, like, if they're going to go out.
They could have been
boats.
They could have been babies that had sight of their own.
And it's not just sight. Well, yeah, but you know, they're not fast. They ain't got it. They don't got the spark anymore. We got the sparks, and we got to hit it. We got to hit the flint and the steel, and we got to light this fire. This is grassroots. And speaking of which, I'm going to go celebrate. All right, brother.
All right. You have been this has been a magnificent display of your sagely self, Albert.
Oh, don't! I gotta get that. I gotta get a pressure release valve in my head. You're putting it too much pressure.
Yeah, I can't help it. You're saging.
All right, brother.
Later, brother. But
be good.
Fear is the mind killer, brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. And let's roll along and see who's where, if anywhere. Y'all bailed out. So, it's about 25 minutes before the hour. And with all of the silly foolishness that the right wing does. Well, not back up. If you've been listening for the whole program, you've heard the full gamut of expression between I give up on Barack Obama and what horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner rightly noted was projection on my part and Reverbo's, and possibly some on Albert's as well. And projection is, while identifiable, is also a natural human impulse. We have a lot of us invested a lot of emotional or psychic or whatever energy you want to describe it as, in Barack Obama. We bought hope. And it is damned hard to let go of it. I see this as this torture business as a profound mistake. Profound. But there are reasons, there are other things that are being gotten right. And I can only hope that if we make enough noise, perhaps we can, what did Gandhi say, be the change that you're wanting to see? We're in charge of the change. And if that sounds too platitudinal, I apologize. It may be one of my ugly little Pollyanna moments. But I'm disgusted. And Maura is right. It is Eric Holder we should be leaning on, because the Attorney General of the United States, while serving in the executive branch, is actually supposed to have more independence than any other member of the cabinet. And then there's the House of Representatives. I wonder how long it will be before one of those profoundly good human beings like Dennis Kucinich stands up and offers articles of impeachment against Jay Bibee. I hope it's soon. I do indeed hope it's soon. Because it should happen, it must happen. We must at least talk about it. Impeach him in the House, try him in the Senate, and ditch him. Then again, you know what? I may be wrong. Impeachment may not rise in the House where federal judges are concerned, because they are, in fact, the ones who confirm a federal judge. It may be exclusively, I don't know. Somebody needs to straighten me up on that. I just got to thinking about it. But we live in a country that is far from clean-handed. Now, while we have talked about the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or Abu Zubaydah and all the horror that entailed, Reverbo brought up earlier the story of the young man who, again, not convicted of any crime, had his head repeatedly slammed into a concrete wall and repeatedly abused by a juvenile detention center guard. We talked about the fact that
Lindy England, Charles Grainer, were National Guardsmen who came out of the private sector prison industry, or at least out of the prison guard system. And that's where they learned to do what they did at Abu Ghraib. Then there's this. It is the story of a 19-year-old named Savannah Redding. In 2003, she was a 13-year-old. In 2003, she was an honor student in 8th grade at Stafford Middle School, about 127 miles from Tucson, Arizona. In 2003, at Stafford Middle School, a kid was caught with a prescription-strength Advil, ibuprofen. Maybe it was Motrin. But it was prescription strength, either 600 or 800 milligrams. They said, kid, where'd you get this? You better tell us the truth or we're going to throw you out of school and your permanent record will be ruined. And the kid said, well, Savannah Redding gave it to me because I got a headache. So they hauled Savannah Redding in, 13 years old, on the cusp of adolescence, an honor student, and officials at the school strip-searched her. Now, I know that's a far cry from waterboarding, but the same mindset that says it's okay to waterboard says it's okay to strip-search a 13-year-old. Like most of you, if someone called and told me that my youngest had just been strip-searched at school, I wouldn't be here right now. I wouldn't be here. I could not be held from what I might do. But strip-searched she was, and she sued. She was strip-searched because the school has a zero-tolerance policy for all drugs, prescription and non-prescription. And at issue this week in the Supreme Court of the United States is whether school authorities had the right to do that to that little honor student. I don't have a good feeling about this. Remember bong hits for Jesus? Those children were punished when they weren't even doing anything on school property. Unfurled a banner at a parade, just said bong hits for Jesus. Just a lark, something stupid, silly. They were punished because the Supreme Court said that a student has little or no rights. The child was traumatized. She's 19 years old now. But she was traumatized. She is represented by Adam Wolf, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. And this case will go before the Supreme Court of the United States. And the outcome will not be good. Under the guise of we've got to fight drugs and children have a diminished expectation of privacy in the public schools, it will be declared that a principal has the right to order an adolescent strip-searched over ibuprofen. And it is that rationale that, see, it really is. These, you know, they talk about gateway drugs. This is gateway law. Okay? Deciding that children have no reasonable expectation of privacy in school is a step along the road that leads to, well, screw whether or not he's guilty. Let's just waterboard him every 6 hours for the next 31 days. So if nothing else, let us have our eyes wide open and our ears peeled and be paying attention. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's up, man?
Oh, nothing. I've been listening. I don't know if, I tuned in late. You know, on Crooks and Liars, there's a petition to sign to impeach this Bybee?
Yes.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
The judge?
Right.
I don't know if that was mentioned.
Yeah, we haven't.
I urge people to go sign the petition.
Oh, I didn't know there was a petition there, but absolutely.
Yes, there is a petition. And I guess impeachment of a federal judge starts in the House also?
Well, that's what I'm trying to sort out, Wayne. I'm not sure. I assume that all impeachment runs the same way.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I don't know if that's correct or not, but
I think so. I think it does start in the House, and then if impeached, it goes to the Senate.
Well, you know, I urge everybody to contact their representatives in the House and demand that this guy be impeached. And watching the news earlier, and I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but Senator Feinstein, who's not always my favorite person, has written a letter to the president and told him to back off this, not prosecuting people.
Well, I'll be dipped. Of all the people, I did not expect to do that.
Exactly. Believe me, too. She says, you know, let us do our investigation. So, you know, that was rather encouraging. And, you know, who was on earlier? Albert?
Yeah.
You know, he's absolutely right. This is in our hands. You know, pressure your congressman and your senator to hold these people accountable. And, I have great respect for the president. I think he's the greatest thing that's happened to our country for a long, long time. I think we have to push him to where, you know, he says, look, this is the will of the people. And we have to. This is the most sickening thing I've ever. I mean, reading these things and listening to it is just. Well, it's disgusting. It's absolutely.
It makes you feel like you're coming on a little unstuck, a little loose in reality, because, you know, intentionally semi-drowned 6 times a day for 31 days. And then you say, by the United States of America.
Right, and, you know,
those two are not supposed to latch together, Wayne.
Right, well, and if it works so well, why did you have to do it, what, 186 times with the one guy or something?
Well, there's that.
You know, or was, you know, he told us everything the first time, it was just so much fun, we kept doing it.
And that's the question that has to be answered.
Yes, it does, and... Well, you know, this isn't the United States of America. This isn't what the United States of America stands for. We are better than this. And the only way to prove that is to prosecute these people that did this. And, you know, and to be honest with you, you know, I'm not so worried about the CIA guys. I want the dudes at the top.
Yeah, I want John Yoo. I want Jason Bybee. I want David Addington.
Exactly.
I want the guys who can sit there and dictate a memo that allows a guy to be semi-drowned for 31 days, 6 hours, every 6 hours, at the same time that he's getting an instant message on his computer saying, where do you want to go for lunch? At the same time, his wife is calling and saying, bring home a pound of chip-chop ham and a loaf of bread and a jug of milk.
Exactly.
Because that person is so morally compromised, Wayne, that he has no business in polite society.
No, and you know, also, I mean, you know, it would send a people, I think, a message to these, to the Bill Kristols and the Britt Humes and all the rest of these people that sit there and try to justify this, you know.
And there's
the Rush Limbaughs.
Yeah, and there's a quantum to this, too, as well, Wayne. You know, you and I are grandfathers now. And we could look back to 1975, and we can see over the course of nearly 35 years the exact effect that not prosecuting and not jailing or somehow punishing Richard Nixon, we can see the effect that that had on us. And you know, I hate to make this comparison because it might seem unfair to some, but it doesn't to me. What is the difference between Barack Obama saying, we're looking forward and not looking back. And Gerald Ford saying, our long national nightmare is finally over. Philosophically and actually, what is the difference between those two statements? Not much as far as I can tell.
Not any. There's not any. Our long nightmare is over because I just pardoned the jerk?
Yeah, his long nightmare was over, not ours.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Our long nightmare lay before us in death squads in El Salvador and Guatemala and Nicaragua and Honduras. In arms traded for hostages.
Yeah.
In exactly. Illegal wars. Our long national nightmare was only beginning. And the question that I have to ask, and I don't think it's unfair, tell me if it is. What long national nightmare is unfolding with this? Because once you've said that we're not going to look backward at these kind of crimes, well, what kind of crimes will you look backward at? Any?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, I'm a little older now, but, you know, there's with some of the stuff I get involved in, there's always the possibility of getting arrested, and that's going to be my defense. Your Honor, let's look forward. I'll be a good guy from now on. I mean.
And guess what?
It won't happen.
It won't work.
No, it won't work. No, it won't work. But. Anyway, I urge people to go sign this petition. It's at Crooks and Liars. And contact your representatives. I will certainly be doing that tomorrow morning.
I've got three letters. And you know what? I think maybe this is one of those, and I've heard so much, Wayne, that email means more, that letters mean more than email. You know, physical, print it out and mail it, lick the stamp, you know, or whatever.
How is that working these days? You know, after the anthrax scares, you know, letters.
Oh, it still takes a month of Sundays to get there, and I think that may be why they value them more.
That may be, you know.
So this is three letters that get printed, enveloped, and mailed tomorrow.
Okay, and email them too.
Oh yeah, that's not to say don't email them, but make sure that they get a hard copy.
Exactly. And, you know, well, you've received them yourselves. And, I mean, I don't know how many people write or email or get in contact with their congressman, but the majority of them will write you back. Now, I mean, you know, it's usually a, you know, form letter kind of thing, but, you know, it's you'll get a reply. You'll get a reply.
Agnes keeps a little notebook of all of them. We get a letter, either she or I, because we do spend so much time communicating with them, probably a letter every other day or so from either Rockefeller, Byrd, or Ray Hall.
Yeah.
And they reply without fail.
Yes, they do. Well, they don't have to pay any postage, you know.
Well, there is that, isn't there? See, you can just take the air right out of my hopeful little balloon, can't you?
It's kind of like sending a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yeah, they don't. And see, that's the fun part. They don't have to pay for postage. We do.
We do.
Not just for ours, but for theirs.
That's okay. That's still the greatest bargain in the world as far as I'm concerned. The post office. I mean, I went in the other day. I don't know. What are they? They're going up to 44 cents.
Yeah, something like that.
May 13th or the 1st of May or something or other. And, you know, I told the postmaster lady, I said, you know, why don't you get, you know, go to 50, man, and leave us alone for a couple of years. She informed me that it's going up every May from now on. So,
oh, wow.
It just seems like they'd save a lot of money.
But, you know, even so, the fact that I can put a stamp on something here and I can send it to San Francisco or San Diego or anywhere in the contiguous 48, and that sucker has a pretty good chance of getting here from here to there in 3 days.
Yeah.
That's still pretty reasonable.
That's what I told her. 50 cents is a bargain as far as I'm concerned.
Because you know what? I can't stick that same letter in a FedEx envelope and get it there in 3 days for 50 cents.
No, you can't. No, you can't. I think it's, like I say, I think it's a bargain. So. But write those letters. Let's impeach this guy. That, you know, and, you know, that may send a message to a lot of other people and to the Obama administration.
And you know what? If they ask the Obama administration about that one, there's one answer and one answer only that is acceptable. That is entirely the business of the House and Senate, and we ain't got nothing in it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, and, well, then again, the same thing goes with prosecuting these people, too. That's up to the Attorney General, who is supposed to be one of the most, the freest agency going, that they do what they see fit.
He operates independently, precisely.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, good hearing from you, brother, and we will talk soon.
Okay, man. Have a good evening.
Later, man.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye.
That's the boss man, Wayne. Go sign the petition. There's a link to it over at Crooks and Liars. And let's see. Oh, no, you left. Okay. Well, it's 5 minutes before the hour. What a wild Monday this has been. Thanks, everybody, for processing through all of this. A note of congratulations before we go. By the way, there will be the petition itself also, ELO tells me. The petition will be, she's whipping up a post with the petition now. It'll be in the video section on the homepage, headonradionetwork.com, under video. It'll be there, a link to the petition. So you can find it there and send, and, you know, we can always use the traffic at headonradionetwork.com. That's just part of the whole process. No, what Albert mentioned about the fact that it's also Earth Day is very, very important. And I would be profoundly remiss if I let the program end this evening without sending out my congratulations to someone that is very dear to me and whom you have heard on the program before and I think you have immense respect for as well. We heard not too long back from Maria Ganeau. You'll remember Maria lives at Bob White, West Virginia. Coal companies have done everything in their power to run her off her land that she and her families and forebears have been on for generations. You heard her say, "I ain't leaving." And she's not. They've flooded her. They've poisoned her land. Her dogs have been killed. She has had her life threatened by people involved with mountaintop removal for testifying in court. Well, it's tough for Maria to get a lot of respect that she deserves here in a place that is owned by coal. But it is a different thing entirely in the wide world. I'm very proud to announce that as of today, Maria Ganeau is one of seven 2009 winners of the Goldman Prize, referred to by some as the Environmental Nobel. There are winners from each continent. North America's winner this year is Maria Ganeau for the tireless work that she has done upstream for all of us who are downstream. We love you, Maria, and congratulations. And that brings us to a close for tonight. Thank you to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thank you to John Fox for all that he does, host of All Foxed Up Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as being our webmaster, our chief musician, our web designer, and our chief engineer. Thanks, John. To Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who literally saved the medium when he founded the White Rose Society in 2002, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks, Ben. Thanks to all of you who do what you do to keep the horn going. Thanks to you, we made it to the halfway point for our fundraising for the month of April. Now all we've got to do is get downhill and get the other half, and we will have actually made a month where we saw our monthly goal fulfilled.
and that would be like breathing air to us. And thank you for making it possible that we've gotten as far as we have this month. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, coalriverwind.org. You know, one of the directors of that organization is our friend Judy Bonds. She, too, a winner of the Environmental Nobel, the Goldman Prize, some years back. I am blessed to be associated with some amazing people, dedicated people, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.